an option of either we start late or we cancel. The option of postponing became unviable at all, because it would have meant you as the department and the other entities spent money and time to be here, and therefore that was not a viable option. I think let's go straight to the presentations. We will deal with matters of program afterwards. And before we get to the presentations, let's make a round of introductions so that we can make sense of who is here. My name is Fred Corner. I'm the chairperson of this portfolio committee. Next to me is...
My name is Nolita Ndoskaka. I'm the committee secretary.
Good morning. My name is Chris Horulu. I'm a member of this committee.
I'm Faith Bikani, also a member of the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. My name is Hendrik Schmidt, member of this committee. I've been here since 9 o'clock this morning.
Good morning. My name is Krizal Lewis. I'm the secretary to the work of the committee.
Good morning. My name is Wiswa Mung. I'm the PLO DMR.
Good morning. My name is Bongseni Ngobo. I'm the researcher for the committee.
Good morning. My name is Nomokosa Nachoma, parliamentary staff.
Good morning. I'm Futhi Zikalala. I'm the acting chief executive officer of the State Diamond Trader.
Good morning. My name is Levi Rapo. I'm the chief executive officer for the South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator.
Good morning. My name is Linda Makatini. I'm the chairperson of the State Diamond Trader.
Good morning. Steve Peary, the chairperson of the regulator.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Busisa Mandazi, the acting CFO for the South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator.
Good morning. My name is Linda Nkumishe. I'm from the South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator.
Good morning. My name is Martin Munonela, the General Manager of South African Diamond and Precious Metals Regulator.
Good morning. I'm Tanzami Kripo, CEO of Petroleum Agency.
Good morning. I'm Olivia Mansa. I'm the CFO of Petroleum Agency.
Good morning, I'm Lindiwe Mekwe, the General Manager Regulation Division in Petroleum Agency.
Good morning, my name is Noel Ngabaza, HR Manager, Petroleum Agency.
Morning, Ziggy Fanagor Beike, General Manager Promotion, Petroleum Agency.
Good morning, Feldun Storm, Information Services Manager at Petroleum Agency, SA.
But Linda from Business Day. Bulama Maja is a vision.
My name is Luke Simpson, I'm from the PMG, and I've also been here since 9 o'clock in the morning.
Andrew Gasnola, a member of the public. Thank you very much. You see, the advantage for those who have been here since 9 o'clock is that you went through these documents. Members of Parliament then will have an advantage of asking more questions than others. So it's not time wasted. And indeed, let's hand over to State Diamond Trader to take us through their presentation.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have brought with me, as introductions as indicated, the acting CEO. She will go through the presentation and we will assist with the questions when necessary.
Chairperson. The presentation is appears on the board. I'll just take you through, and hopefully all members through you, Chairperson, have got also the strategic plan. It covers the eight areas that have been identified here from the vision of the State Diamond Trader right up to our highlights as we point them out in the document. Our vision is that we want to be a leading catalyst for the transformation of a sustainable diamond beneficiation industry. And our mission, one, to ensure acquisition of and equitable access to rough diamonds with particular focus on historically disadvantaged South Africans. Two, let's say they're going to support the growth of the industry through relevant interventions. And three, we want to establish and maintain a client base of local diamond beneficiators. We have put four strategic goals, and these are to ensure continued sustainability of the State Diamond Trader, and to be an efficient and professionally managed organization. Three, to promote and uphold efficient governance. And lastly, to strive for a constant and suitable supply and access to rough diamonds. Our values. We say that we respect the, you know, the rights of our stakeholders, and we also promote a caring attitude. We promote diversity and create an empowering and working environment. We are committed to our mandate, to its promotion, defense, and execution. We say that we are agile, you know, we anticipate, we are proactive in problem solving, and we are resourceful, as well as efficiency in, you know, providing professionalism and excellence in all that we do as a State Diamond Trader. Our strategic goals are supported by these strategic objectives. The first one being sourcing state funding for the operations of the State Diamond Trader, which may well sound not that strategic, but when you have knowledge of the history of this institution and where we are at the moment, this is quite strategic for this institution. The second one is to improve profitability of the State Diamond Trader operations so that we can ensure its sustainability, provide support to our clients, develop and acquire appropriate human resource capacity, develop, implement and maintain admin systems, procedures and controls, develop and maintain trading relations with other African diamond producing countries, improve positive relations with producers to access better quality goods, and finally to enforce compliance with the legislation on trading matters. At this point, I think that it would be appropriate that I go through the strat plan on its Chairperson, which has been sent to all committee members. Can you see it? Yes, we can. This strategic plan was last reviewed on the 17th of February 2011. I am not going to go through the vision, mission and all that because I have just gone through that in the main presentation. I will just go straight on to the activities as they appear now. I'm not sure if they will all appear as I would like them to.
Just before you move further, I'm not sure if it's only myself. Is it here? Okay. All right. No, I'm being pointed that it's contained within the package that you have given us. Please proceed.
Thank you. As has been pointed out about the funding, state funding for the State Diamond Trader, these are the activities and targets that we have to, we said we will undertake to make sure that we meet the time frame for the MTEF submission by the department, which is, you know, starting now in June and will potentially, or, you know, end in July. And so it says that we will, you know, work on our business case, which, you know, is currently with the department, and we are working on it with the department. And we've been invited to then work on the MTEF submission with the department, and we're doing that currently. The second one is that of improving profitability of the State Diamond Traders operation. And because we want to make sure that we continue operating as a going concern. So we say that we are going to improve our stock turnaround times, maintain gross margin rates, and we have said that we wanted to make sure that we reduce our turnaround time on stocks, and so we have come up with that weighted average number of days of 14, which is reasonable and is, you know, achievable to a large extent. And our gross margin, the minimum of which is at 4%, and we want to work on that so that we make sure that while we're still looking for funding and we're trying to raise our own revenues, we are still competitive enough for the local industry to be able to buy our goods, you know, at 4% margin. We have targeted the reduction of our operating costs to be this year now at 5%, and we're working on that, and we want to make sure we achieve that by the end of the financial year, and that will help us in improving our profitability. We are also continuously looking at our trading policies, as we want to create an enabling environment to deliver the required profits. And we do that, we said we're going to do it again in September, and this is an annual, you know, undertaking. And we also want to increase the number of and the value of sales that we have with historically disadvantaged South African clients. And we see as a target, we set a target of 10% per annum in terms of increase, not just the number that we have, but making sure that the trading activity between us and the HDSA clients is increased. We would like to, we said that we want to also maintain our relationships and negotiate improved funding arrangements with the IDC. We are working on this. It's not an easy one, but it's about reducing the cost of funding, as we will all know that loan funding is very costly, and it is also one of those costs that this young institution has had to bear. And our hopeful target of prime minus 1% is still our goal line, although at this point in time it's much higher than that. It's prime, at that prime, plus 1.5%. We also want to provide support to our clients. And in this, we have said that we want to make sure that our clients, you know, have sustainable businesses in the end. So we are going to facilitate again the technical and business management training, and we said that we will target 20 of the HDSA clients this year and facilitate their training with external stakeholders and that we do business with as well, I mean, such as your MQAs and others at government level that provide such training. We also are saying that we'll continue to provide market intelligence for the HDSA clients particularly, and on a quarterly basis, and facilitate access to finance by therefore ensuring that we talk to funding institutions and making sure that when we have some workshops or invite them to come and talk to the clients that require funding and explain their cases to them and then see where they take it forward between themselves and obviously not the state diamond traders. It is not in a position to provide funding. Develop and acquire appropriate human resource capacity. We would like to have appropriate skills and capacity to ensure that we are able to deliver on our efficiency that we talked about as a goal. Approval of HR policy, that has been done, as the target was April 2011, that has been done. We have that policy, and in terms of succession planning programs, they, apart from talking about the issues of training, which we currently are doing, and recruitment of diamond experts or people to be experts in the future, we've started that process. As the target said, there's the training, we've designed that, and it is ongoing. Capacity building, that is something that we're still working on as well, and in terms of identifying skills and ensuring continuous capacity building for staff. Monitoring and review is also ongoing. The next one is that of developing, implementing and maintaining systems and internal business processes. One of the key areas there is to make sure that our core business item, which is diamonds, that we adequately insured, and that all our assets as well are adequately insured, and we update our client registers as it appears there, and we continuously review and maintain our procurement procedures, which is done on an annual basis, as well as implementing all internal business processes for clean audits, and this is done, you know, on a regular basis, on a quarterly basis, as we have targeted here, that no matter what, it's got to be done. Adhering to corporate governance legislation and policies, we want to make sure that we are compliant at all times. Issues of audit and risk management committee meetings and preparing and approval of all statutory reports, such as our quarterly reports, which have to be submitted and are submitted to the shareholder on a quarterly basis, as well as annual reports that are done on an annual basis, as well as all the other documentation that is required by the shareholder in terms of agreement with the shareholder. As well as ensuring that we do board evaluations and induction of new board members, you know, so that we can get maximum participation and make sure that our strategic leaders are at all times, you know, giving us the direction that is required. And all the meetings that have got to take place, as well as maintaining asset registry, which is on an ongoing basis, and our IT policies, which have, you know, now recently also been approved, and addressing issues of audits, which have come from previous audits by the Auditor General, and this is being done on an annual basis. And then the monitoring and evaluation of the implementation of all our approved policies, and this is ongoing. We said this will do on an ongoing basis. We said that we'll conduct annual risk assessment and management at board level,
and then have an updated risk register, which is done on an annual basis, and this has been done as well, as well as the implementation of our corporate governance manual and board charters, which is also ongoing and reviewed on an annual basis as well. Board strategic sessions are held twice per annum, and the first one hasn't been done already this year, and we're going to have another one mid-year. The last one, the last goal has got the objectives enforcing legislation for, you know, compliance with legislation. Rough diamonds will be made available to local beneficiaries and the state diamond trader to comply with its legislated requirements, ensuring that all producers complete our operational plan, and that is still ongoing. Still have a target that is taking us to the end of the financial year, really, as we still want to get them all to sign. But in terms of also inspecting all rough diamonds that are produced in this country, and we're saying that there's productions, you know, looking at the small producers, the diggers, we're saying that by this year we want to make sure that we get as much as 60% of all producers, including particularly those small diggers who have so far eluded the state diamond trader, but we are on course to try and get them to also comply with legislation. We say that we want to purchase up to the full 10%, because the proclamation says that we have to purchase up to 10%. So by this year, we want to make sure that, you know, we go up to 9% by all, and we have seen that last year we were able to raise the stakes to just over 8% in terms of what we were able to purchase from the producers that are producing in this country. So that will help us, in, you know, by getting all the diggers, we'll be able to go higher up in terms of that percentage as well. This one, improving relations with producers. This will help us in selecting rough diamonds as per the demands of our clients. With obviously, this is not as legislated, because in the legislation it says run of mine or a representative sample. But we want to improve on that in terms of the relations that we have with individual producers, and the saying that we will also update our demand, our client demand, and develop the producer engagement strategy, as well as negotiate with relevant producers. And the update is done annually, and we've chosen December, as that is what we've done also previously. And the producer engagement strategy has been developed, and it is awaiting final approval by the board, which the board is seized with. And the number of producers that will cooperate with us, we are working on that in terms of the strategy. And we want to also reduce the number of disputes that we have with producers, particularly around fair market values and other disputes, particularly fair market value, because those end up being quite costly for the state diamond trader, bearing in mind that the legislation says that we also pay for the independent valuations. We want to increase the number of producers that are complying, you know, and therefore by reducing that number, and the complying ones up to 80% by next year. In terms of developing and maintaining trading relations with other African diamond producing countries, we have said that we will be doing a cost-benefit analysis, which has been done, not and the report is already available on that, but it's a board report on that.
And thereafter, we're looking now at making sure that we have a strategy on importing rough diamonds from these countries, and we will complete that this year, and then have supply agreements, if that is the way we will go, by at least March 2013. But if it happens before time, then the board will work on that. We will then make its decisions and directions around that. At this point, Chairperson, I will go back then to the presentation and to continue the presentation and say that now we're looking at our HR plan. The committee chairperson will recall that we have said on a number of occasions when we've come here that the State Diamond Trader has got staff that have been seconded by primarily two institutions, the Department of Mineral Resources as well as the BS, as well as now having its own contracted staff, you know, all of them being on fixed term contracts. Until obviously we were waiting for the time when the state funding would come through, you know, that stabilization that would come with that, and we'd be able to then implement our HR plan, which was approved way back in 2008. The board, you know, having looked at all the operations as well as the direction and what is happening, the growth that is there, the State Diamond Trader, decided this year that it will begin to implement its Asia plan. And it will do so by first appointing its CEO by May 2011. And the process did begin. And as this is a concurrence matter with the minister, that is what I believe is still to happen between the board and the ministry, as well as appointing another officer, which at this point in time we're calling this position a shadow officer, because the number of skills that have got to be learned from the donated officials, and this shadow officer will be appointed by November 2011. And also the board decided that management has to continue still in the implementation of the HR plan and continue, and then this year employ four additional diamond trainees by May 2011, which has happened. The challenges, among the other challenges of complaints and all that that we face on a daily basis, which is normal for any business, that many complaints. Significant ones are the security of our funding, the state funding that I spoke about earlier, that we still are working on getting the state funding, as you know, a shareholder is working on that. The run of mine purchasing, and therefore the availability of goods, the right type of goods for the beneficiaries, and just, you know, goods to ensure increased local beneficiation. Because at the moment, what we buy is run of mine, by and large, is 85% not suitable or not preferred by the local beneficiating industry. And you end up with only about 15%, which also, when you get down to it and you look at the client demand analysis that we have done, it indicates that only about 6% of what we buy currently is what they want, and they want to beneficiate locally. So this is still also another challenge that we're working on, and we have to resolve and see how we come to a solution around that. As the business grows, and therefore taxes are being paid to the state, it appears that, I mean, even for this young institution with all its challenges, the tax burden on it is quite considerable, bearing in mind that
it gets taxed at around 28%, and so whatever small revenues are being made through its trading activities, 28% of that goes to the state, and it is a bit of a challenge, but it's something that is a way of life, I guess, for businesses in this country and elsewhere in the world. It's just that it is quite significant for a small entity, so it poses quite a big challenge as well. And our highlights as a state diamond trader. Despite all the challenges that I've spoken about, and I just alluded to the ones of complaints against the state diamond trader, but in spite of all that, and in spite of all the challenges around funding, this is what the trader has been able to do. We have 8 young graduates who are in training with us, and they're training, four have been in training since April last year, and we've employed 4 more now, and so we see that as something that is quite significant for an entity our size, that we're able to do it even also with limited resources, as we do have limited resources. And the diamond trading, we see it as growing annually. As a committee, we'll see as we present later on in the year our annual report that our trading has grown from what it was last year, where we had a turnover of around 330 million rands, to where we are this year, just over 800 million rands. That there is growth there, but obviously, you know, there are these other challenges that I've raised as well. We've also seen more of our clients trading with us during the 2010-11 financial year. In actual fact, the 60 that traded with us on a continuous basis versus the 34, which was in 2009-10. And through the IASS, the interim sales strategy, we've been even able to supply suitable goods to our smaller clients. We've been able to do that, and which has effectively been more like cherry picking for them than anything else. But it is good for their factories, it's good for them to be able to cut and polish themselves. It's been quite good for the 60 that we have done in 1 year. We've also facilitated training for some of our clients, small ones, and exposed some of them as well to recognize fora such as your Jewelex, where they were able to market themselves, you know, at that exhibition that takes place annually in Johannesburg. So we feel that, you know, we'll continue doing this, as we have pointed out, as we need them to grow, and therefore that will mean growth for our operations as well. Thank you, Chairperson, for this opportunity.
Thank you very much. I would take it that there are no further additions on the part of the State Diamond Traders. That's all. Thanks a lot. Honorable members, there you are, the presentation from the State Diamond Trader. Let's engage with that. Honorable Khululu, Honorable Schmidt, Honorable Bigard.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me thank the State Diamond Trader for the presentation. I've got these 2 questions to ask. I just want to seek clarity on the question of the challenges that they face regarding the tax implications thereof. They mentioned that they are taxed something like 28%. Is it irrespective of the profit that you make, or it's generally you are taxed 28% irrespective of the fact that you've made profit? I don't know if my question is clear. That would be the first one, Chair. The second one, actually, it's the people that they on skills development. I think they do train people. What is the criteria that they use there, Chair? Do you concentrate on to go to accept applications from each province, or you concentrate where mining activity in Diamond takes place or what? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The strategy document, can I just confirm, firstly, whether the activities which have been amended since February 2011, whether those activities were done in February, in other words, to allow in particular, and I'm talking from page 12 of that document, which says develop and maintain trading relations with other African diamond producing countries. Was that inserted with that particular review? And secondly, does the Act provide for trading with neighboring countries? Which Act, if any? Then thirdly, there were allegations, well, let me put you this way. Has the state diamond trader imported diamonds from neighboring countries, and in particular the Marangi region? More in particular, has the chairperson of the state diamond trader, on behalf of the state diamond trader, imported diamonds any time during the course of this year? If so, when? If so, if she did so, was it in accordance with the policy of the state diamond trader and the Act which allows the state diamond trader to operate? Then I just want to make a comment. It might not be a question, but there's been all kinds of allegations in the media that the Kimberley process might be affected by the South African stance on the Kimberley process, more in particular with regards to allegations flowing from the Marenga region. During the budget debate, I raised the issue, and the minister said, look at the process, look at the chairman's authority of the Kimberley process to allow or not to allow, seemingly, the import from diamonds from Marenga. That is exactly what I did. So I went to the documentation, the administrative decisions, which a chairperson may be allowed to take. And it says the following. It says the chair of the Kimberley process represents the collective will of the participants as reflected in corresponding Kimberley process decisions. The allegation is that the owner Kimberley process decision that allows Marangi to import diamonds from Marangi to import diamonds from Marangi. Now, if that is so, then I'd like to understand what the department or the state diamond trader's view would be on the importation, and I'm not saying she did, and that's what I'm asking, of any possible allegation that the chairperson of the state diamond trader, on behalf of the state diamond trader, possibly, not in accordance, but against the Kimberley process, imported such diamonds, either on her own behalf or possibly on behalf of the state diamond trader. Thank you.
I don't know. It's my personal opinion. The presentation that has just been made on the straight train is so vague and so abstract that I'm just wondering if we're going to have to approve this today, because I wouldn't approve it. One, there was the last time there was an issue that the technical staff is being seconded by DPS. Is that still the case? And if so, what are the plans as part of the strategy to turn that around? The other issue, the last time I think there were issues from the AG's report. Chair, I might be a bit out in this one because I had a gap. I was away from the committee, so in terms of years, I'm not clued up. But I do know that there was an issue of compliance towards the PSMA. There was a problem of compliance with the last AG's report. And there were complaints of inadequate reporting, as well as your time frames not being associated to your performance measures. If that is still the case, and how has that been proven in this strategy, that there's a turnaround
or a change that is being made. Okay, I should think that the SARS issue, I think it was repeatedly said that it was corrected, whether you are not yet registered with SARS. And then the other thing, Chair, I thought in this strategy at least we'd have a reflection of the funding model that they use. If there is a CFO in the presence, can that CFO perhaps then just give us a peep into that funding model and how does it apply to the present strategy that they are giving us now? Then, Chair, the other question is that what percentage of diamond export is beneficiated locally? The actual percentage. And then out of your strat plan, under the first goal, you say that you want to ensure continued sustainability of the STD. And then in terms of your targets, I don't know what the 2010 means, but I should think that your targets by 2010, or they should have aimed at being completed by April 2011. I want to know about the performance measure under submitting a compelling business case and recommendations to DMR and National Treasury, if that has happened. And if you are keeping up with your time frames, what is the last column exactly saying to us? Because it's very abstract. And it doesn't really give a sense of that there's been movement from when you started until now. Am I clear? Or should I repeat myself? The last question. Through you, Chairperson. Goal 1 says there to ensure continued sustainability of the STD. Yeah. Now you've got a performance measure there that says you need to submit a compelling business case and recommendations to DMR and National Treasury. Right? And then I look at your target dates there. There's something that says target 2010. Am I correct? Yeah. In that column at the top there. But at the same time, in terms of your targets, then you've got dates, April 2011, which we have passed. We've got April 2011 again, which we have passed. And then there's June 2011, which says inclusion of the SDT in the MTEF submission by DMR. Now my question is, has this happened or not? Are you still in alignment with those dates? And there's something that's not talking properly to us in terms of your time frames. They don't sound very realistic based on the way you presented your strat plan. Because if you look at some of those dates, it says some of the things that are there on that strat plan should have happened. And I don't get that sense out of the whole strat plan. Chairperson, in conclusion, I don't think I'm quite impressed with this. Unfortunately, there's a lot of abstract talking in this document. It doesn't really give us a sense of any developments or improvements in terms of the state diamond trade. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would you care to respond to those for now, and we'll come back with others.
Thank you, Chair.
Firstly, the first question that came through was around taxation, the 28% that we raised. It is, we are taxed as a normal corporate, and that's why we get taxed at 28%. The challenge, as I tried to indicate, was around the fact that our finances are, you know, growing little by little, and we have to grow them from a no base, really. And but at the same time, we've got to contend with the fact that we are a government business entity, and we get taxed at the level that other companies get taxed in this country, which then, you know, eats on the small profits that we're making, you know, on a regular basis. That was just a challenge around that. Otherwise, it takes into account all our overheads and everything, just like they calculate for other, you know, corporates in this country. In terms of skills development, in the recruitment, when we do recruit, we just make an application, we send out an advert throughout you know, the country, really. We do not say that specifically the diamond producing provinces, etc., except that when we look at the newspapers or the media that we're going to use, we make sure that it covers even areas such as your Kimberley, where traditionally diamonds have been mined, and you know, Free State and all that. So we make sure that the medium that we're using to advertise the positions is as, you know, reflective of South Africa as possible, or reaches all the corners of this country. So we did that, and we do file proof that we've done that as well. The strategy document, Advocate Schmidt, was, as I have indicated, reviewed in February this year. The board sat down and had a whole day's workshop looking at the strategy and looking at what has happened in the previous financial year and what it plans to do this financial year as well. And so once that was done, then this was an agreement that, you know what, even, I mean, there are some things that were taken out which on reflection indicated that maybe it's more the department that has got to do this than the state diamond trade, etc. But this was done in February this year. And then going on from there, all of these, including the relations with other diamond producing countries in Africa, you know, was done in February and has been there in our strategy also in the previous financial year. This is coming from the Act, the Diamond Amendment Act, you know, one of the two, 29 and 30 of 2005, that the state diamond trader is allowed in terms of that Act to buy diamonds from other diamond producing countries. The Act does not even say African, it just says other diamond producing countries. The state diamond trader is able to buy from them. Now, the second question that you raised, Honorable Member Schmidt, about the state diamond trader, whether it has imported diamonds from neighboring countries, especially Marange, which is in Zimbabwe. The state diamond trader has not yet imported diamonds from any of these African producing countries. It has not, but we have done our exercise in terms of looking at the cost-benefit analysis. You know, when we get there, will we have enough resources? Will we have, you know, what are the rules? And will we be selling more expensive diamonds because of the costs that are involved, etc.? So we've looked into that the whole of the last financial year, and you know, we do have a report, and it needs, you know, to be added to this year, because we'll continue to look at other countries as well. Now, the other question was, has the chairperson of the state diamond trader imported rough, when and in line with what legislation? I would like to answer this question in this manner. That, firstly, the state diamond trader has what we affectionately call a stakeholder board. Members of the board of the state diamond trader are involved in one way or another in the diamond industry. Some of them are producers, representing producers, others are representing beneficiators, others are representing funders, etc. So it is in the law, and the law that set up and said that the minister should appoint board members is specific on that area, that these members have to come from the industry. Now, the chairperson of the state diamond trader, who is Advocate Linda Macatini, has always been involved, well, at least even by the time that she became a board member, she was involved in the diamond industry. She was a partner with one of the companies. Obviously, I know the name, but she was a partner there as well. And she has always been in there. So for all intents and purposes, she was therefore part of the stakeholder board of the State Diamond Trader, and just like other board members who would therefore have conflicts of interest and others who would not, the conflict of interest is declared annually and at each meeting, because then that is how corporate governance is to be complied with. So, she is. Now, the State Diamond Trader being more of a local, local entity than, for instance, the regulator. The regulator also is in charge of the Diamond Export and Exchange Center. And so they license people and they are in charge of imports and exports. And so the State Diamond Trader cannot say something like this company and that company have exported or have not exported diamonds, because this is not the role that the State Diamond Trader plays. But having said that, the State Diamond Trader is aware that the chairperson has imported diamonds, or her company has imported diamonds from Zimbabwe. And that would have been, and it was, because now that we have known about it, she has declared it to us, we have checked on the days and all that, it was after an administrative decision that was issued on the 19th of March, 2011, by the KP chairperson, who is DRC, to the effect that diamonds from Zimbabwe, particularly from Marangi, can be exported by Zimbabwe. And so in line with that, South Africa took a decision as a country that we are going to receive, import, and therefore receive diamonds from Marangi in Zimbabwe. So it was a South African political decision that can be done. And from all that we have seen in her declarations as a chairperson and therefore the person, or one of the directors or the main directors in her company, is that even that importation was done after that 19th March 2011 admin decision by the Kimberley Process chairperson. Even the State Diamond Trader itself, having said before that we've not yet imported anything from anywhere in the world, can import diamonds even from Marange or from elsewhere in the world because of the political decision taken by South Africa. But in addition to that, last week we were at the DRC, where that admin decision of 19 March 2011 was expiring, and at that KP intersessional meeting, another decision, now the communique from that, we do have it, and we were there and we participated, and it is signed and it indicates that with monitoring, imports can be done or exports can be done from Zimbabwe. Zimbabwe can export its goods, but that the specific ones like Mbata and I think Marange, if my memory serves me well, that those exports may take place from Zimbabwe with immediate effect. Now, that is signed on the 23rd of June 2011 by the KP chairperson from the DRC. And for other mines and the new ones in Zimbabwe, plenary endorsed, or the intersessional meeting plenary endorsed the nomination of a KP chair monitoring team consisting of A.B. Chikane and Mark van Bokstad, and that if there was a lack of agreement between the two of them, then the KP chairperson would come in and try and resolve that issue. Therefore, Honorable Schmidt, for all our corporate governance issues, we are aware that a company belonging to the chairperson of the State Diamond Trade has indeed imported diamonds from the specific area in Zimbabwe, and that was all post admin decisions by the KP chairperson. To continue and to go to the Honorable Member began. I am going to start from where she was talking about technical staff seconded by DPS. The State Diamond Trader, yes, still has technical staff, you know, seconded to it by DPS, as per the very original agreement between the Department of Minerals and Energy then, which is Department of Mineral Resources now, and DPS and the State Diamond Trader, that there would be this training, you know, on technical capabilities at the State Diamond Trader through this secondment. So we still have them. The first, so that SLA between Trader and DPS, it came to an end in October last year, but in it there was a provision that said that it could be extended for another period of 2 years. This has been extended for another term of 2 years to October 2012. Now, as part of that, the State Diamond Trader had said right at the onset that it would start to implement, to train, to get training for people who take over from the DPS personnel when the secondment ends. And so the 8 people that I've spoken about, we started training late last year because of the recession and the funding challenges of the State Diamond Trader. So the first training really began quite late, which was 2011, and then we employed 4 more people this year, because in terms of our approved HR plan, we've got to have 8 young people to train. And so we are training these 8 people in the hope that some of them, if not all of them, will then be ready to take over from the DPS personnel at the end of this extended period, which is October 2012. And that is the plan. Now, I think that when we read that, you know, we need to read that together with the fact that the board has taken a decision that we cannot get to October 2012 with just the technical people having been trained, but we need to have our own CEO, because even this acting CEO is seconded by the Department of Mineral Resources. And so by that time, we need to also have management that is capable enough to run this institution and not just have technical people running this institution. So there is a plan, therefore, to take over from these seconded people when the period ends. Coming back to the issue of the AG. In 2009, which would therefore be 2008-09, the AG had raised quite a number of issues, including ability to continue as a business on a going concern basis. And they also raised the issues around time frames, and that our strategies, our strategic objectives are not time bound, and the issues that they raised. I must say though that Honorable Bigani, that last year the audit report that we got from the AG did not have really issues that were problematic. We had already started, you know, the issue of registering for tax purposes, and we paid taxes for all the years, because it was raised in 2008-09 that we did not pay tax. And so we started that whole process in 2009 already, and going back to when the State Diamond Trader began, and we've paid everything up until right now for the last financial year, which is 2010-11. We've paid for both, you know, periods of provisional tax payments, and we've done that. So I just want to say that I did not bring my AG, my annual report to show that the last AG report really did not, you know, talk about, it did not raise issues that we had to deal with around income tax and the time frames as such. There was an issue about roles, you know, the roles, who reports the responsibilities around that, but which was about the reporting lines and that. But that was all that was in our AG report last year. The funding model. I think that I do want to say this to Honorable Bigani, that the target at the top that says 2010, that I really apologize for, because that should be 2011. It should even be reading 2011, 2012, and 2011, 12, 13, 14, but it should really be reading 2011, 12. So I do apologize for that one. But in terms of now compelling business case, April 2011, we have done our business case and reviewed it. And in fact, you know, the Department of Mineral Resources and the State Diamond Trader are in that whole process. We have had two meetings already looking at the business case and the inputs from the department as well. Already we've had, as I say, that now in June, we've had two meetings with the department on our business case. And as of tomorrow we are at the National Treasury with the department, when really the National Treasury will be telling us, giving us guidelines and answering our questions around submitting requests for the MTF period. So that process begins really in June, as it says here, June 2011, and tomorrow, the 29th, the process begins. And I think that the department has to submit finally to the National Treasury by July sometime its consolidated submission for the MTEF. So we have submitted that, and we're working on it with the Department of Mineral Resources. The percentage of diamond export that is beneficiated locally. I'm not sure if I did understand your question correctly, Honorable Bigani, but as I indicated, that all the run-of-mine that we buy, about 85% is not preferred by local beneficiators. They are specific. They come to you and they say they want 2 to 4 carats. They want 4 to 5 carats. And they tell you the colors. They want D, E, F. And they tell you they want V, S, V, you know, F, I, and F, I, and all that. They're specific. They end up even within the 2 to 10 caratage range, being specific about what they want and, you know, whatever reasons they want that for. So you end up even within that 15% that remains, by and large, cuttable in this country because of the size, because it's bigger and all that, but you still end up with only about 6% from the analysis that we've done that is actually cut and polished in this country of what we get. Now, other companies, the slightly bigger ones, they do go down to your 3 to 6 grader, you know, levels, which is good for us because we still get those and we give that to them. So there are those percentages. So if you then include the 3 to 6 grainers, you can slightly go up from 6% to say 7%. You know, I don't even see us getting to 8% if we consider that as well. So there are those percentages, therefore, that it's either we look at 15, but we know even within that 15, they are all your low-end goods that they don't want to cut and polish, or then we just look at the analysis that the State Diamond Trader at least has done to indicate that 6% of what it buys is what is preferred by the clients that it sells to in this country. And so just moving on from that, so the submission of our business case has happened. And the department is seriously looking at it, as I have indicated. And that is all. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. You want to follow up on Honorable Schmidt and Honorable Bigani?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's a follow-up and just one other question I'd like to ask, if I may just start with the other question. Just an issue regarding a strategic plan.
is there a linkage between the South Africa's national development planning and the Millennium Development Goals priorities, and where do you self stand with regards to it? In other words, where do you strategically, now that we're talking the strategic plans, where do you stand with regards to those? But can I just return back to the issue about the Kimberley process? The issue is, and in contention has always been, and has never been denied, that there was a decision by the Kimberley process chair. Is the authority of that Kimberley process chair to have taken that decision, which is the issue in contention, which you are well aware of? The Kimberley process participants, as I understand, take decisions by unanimity, not by virtue of a decree by the chairperson, to which, if you look at the Kimberley process, he has no decision-making authority. And I'm not talking as an expert, I'm talking as to what I understand from the process, having read it. So he cannot take a decision that one country or one region or the other has conformed to the Kimberley process minimum requirements. And the situation has always been at least before the 23rd of June, because that's the second part of my question. But at least prior to that, the Kimberley process chair, as I understood it, decision was legally questionable because there was no decision of the Kimberley process participants to allow to make a decision. It's a decision of the Kimberley process, and he then gives effect to it, as which says in paragraph 6, the chair and vice chair should comply with the decisions as well as procedures of the Kimberley process. He doesn't have decision-making authority. But coming back to the 23rd of June, did the Kimberley process participants take a unanimous decision to allow Marangi? That's my question. On the first, so there's two questions. One is 23 June, Kimberley process, and the first one is, what Kimberley process decision and what date was that decision taken to allow Marangi? In other words, not what the Kimberley process chairman decided. I'm looking for the Kimberley process decision and the date and the place, because I have the report here and I have some of the documents here. Thank you.
Yeah, I think, Honourable Schmidt, some of the issues we are raising are matters that needs to be dealt with, especially when we look specifically at the Kimberley process procedures. But for now, the response has been from the State Diamond Trader that there has been an administrative decision taken by the chairperson. Now your question is, was he allowed to take that decision or not? That was done way back in February. But on the 23rd, the response says the very same meeting of the Kimberley process ratified those administrative decisions.
I don't recall saying ratification, because ratification means going backwards and agreeing with the decision backwards, retrospectively.
No.
I don't think that is what she said. I think she took a decision on the 23rd of December.
There's no mistake in what I'm saying, because when you raise the matter, it generated interest in us to go in and also investigate. Hence, we said to you in the House, we're hearing this thing for the first time and we would want you to bring it here. And we made it our business. Let me read it to you from the minutes of that meeting, the full-scale meeting. However, the draft administrative decision contains important matters which can guide interim measures and decisions, consequently taking into account all the considerations raised and to preserve the integrity of the Kimberley process. I hereby in this notice communicate the following. Then it's got one. Then two says that with immediate effect, Zimbabwe is hereby authorized to resume exports from the compliant mining operations of Mbada and Kanadile, which is in Marange. The export shall include the stockpile of both Mbada and Kanadile Marange, as well as their current production, only excluding the 2007-2009 stockpile. Should the WGM fail to reach a consensus on the draft administrative decision and the intersessional export shall continue until administrative decision is passed. Now, in February, there was this administrative decision in
in June, there was this meeting taking place dealing with this matter. Now, I think your main interest was whether the chairperson had a right to take that decision. If he didn't have a right, there wouldn't have been an endorsement of the administrative decision that he has taken. And I'm saying, therefore, that we would need to have a session in terms of the Kimberley process rules and procedures, so that all of us are in the same wavelength to understand this, but also to look at whether it was illegal. Because you were asking whether the decision taken to import those diamonds from Marange, was it based on any piece of legislation? And the response here was that yes, in terms of our existing legislative framework, it is allowed. But I'm just clarifying this so that we don't harp on it, because we're not going to open an inquiry here on this subject matter. But it was good for you to raise it so that you get the clarity directly from the state diamond trader. But surely, we would need to at some point decide in terms of how do we then move forward, because we're not going to turn ourselves into being an inquiry around a matter of this nature. But let me allow the state diamond trader to respond. Let's clarify this matter and put it to bed, if you've got any additions to make from the responses that I've given.
Well, thank you, Chair. I think that you have put it quite correctly. Yes, the ratification does mean something else. But as I indicated, that the admin decision of March 2011 obtained until intercession. It was just, you know, until intercession, because of all the interim issues that were taking place that the chairperson has, respectfully read for us. And then at KP intercessional, a decision was then taken, you know, around the diamonds from Zimbabwe. And as I have pointed out as well, that this is a political decision about South Africa's imports from Zimbabwe. South Africa took a political decision that we will import from Zimbabwe. And as I have pointed out, even the state diamond trader could have, had its finances been in order and its cost-benefit analysis been in order and having been completed. But it has not yet. But obviously any company, private sector company that was ready to do so, wasn't able to do so. And those possibly that didn't do so are still on their way there or are still taking decisions around that. I wouldn't know. But this is a political decision. And I do want to say, Chairperson, if you can allow me for just a short while, to say that apart from the chairpersonship of, well, the leadership of the department and the minister to the KP, the leader of our delegation is official, is here, the CEO of the regulator, and if you do want him to corroborate or to confirm or to state what happened, you know, around that, but I see you want not to open this discussion except for what I've said, but he is here and we were all together in the DRC at the intercessional. The last thing that I'd like to say, well, the last which was the first question from Advocate Schmidt, was around the National Development Goals and whether strategically we do align. Yes, indeed, we do align as much as we can, and you know, fully, because this is, you know, we belong to the state, and so when the state has given us direction, you know, we actually align ourselves, and we want to make sure that there is job creation, you know, but which can only be done, obviously, through our facilitation at the client level, you know, so as long as we make ourselves profitable and work hard towards profitability and facilitating whatever we can facilitate in support of our clients, be certain that there will be more jobs created and there will be more SME activity taking place and skills development, etc., you know, among the clients as well as within the beneficiation industry. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Regulator, sir, do you have anything to add on this matter?
Thank you, Chair. I think it's just to confirm what my colleague has just said here. But I believe that it's important that we must emphasize as the focal point for the country, that the decision that we talked about, the 19 March 2011, was taken after the chair has communicated to all members of the KP and informed them that he's going to use Section 6, Paragraph 5 of the statutes, Kimberley statutes, and he would come back to us of a decision that he has taken. Hence, that led to the administrative decision of the 19 March 2011. The current position, this draft administrative decision, this final administrative decision that comes from Kinshasa now, it was actually agreed by a small committee that was selected by the chairperson. The day before this was announced, the chairperson informed everybody in the Kimberley process that this is what he's suggesting, and we will all have to live by it, and we all agreed, and we broke, and a small team was organized. South Africa was one of the countries, EU, Zimbabwe, USA, and Canada, and we came up with this. It was a draft, and it was read in the intersessional, last meeting of the intersessional. There were proposals on this document, and people were allowed to bring those proposals, and I believe that it was taken into consideration. Although the chairperson emphasized that we've agreed that we'll live by this. And just to end it up, chairperson, the position that South Africa has taken, no one has come to us, no one could show us all the statutes or rules and procedures where we have violated any of such. We actually got a support from EU, who apparently have sought a legal opinion internationally. And that we were told, and I'm just saying what happened there in the meeting, we were told that that legal opinion indicated that if Zimbabwe would have taken us to court, we would not have win this case, and South Africa's position is legitimate. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I hope that this clarifies broadly a number of issues that were of concern, and indeed, as I've indicated, maybe let's have an expose on those statutes, rules, and regulations of the Kimberley process, so that we're in the same wavelength in terms of whatever further discussions, deliberations that we're going to hold. I understand, once you raise Zimbabwe, there are political tensions that rise, but also we need to look at what international bodies such as this KP, you know, decide upon and based on what. And indeed also the decisions taken by the country itself within that ambit would have to be then taken into cognizance. So I'm saying therefore, unless there's another area that is not clear, Advocate Mitch, then we can allow an interaction. But in terms of, you know, further deliberations, we would appeal that let's do that on the same basis. In fact, we are going to further engage with the state diamond trader and the regulator at the point when the diamonds country's strategy is put before us. As you have heard from the deputy minister, that they are working on the industry-wide strategy. Everything to do with diamonds will be contained in that strategy, also the position of the country itself, because the intention is to turn also that industry around so that we are able to play the necessary role that we need to play. But I don't want to close you off if you've got further questions for clarity, but with a view that we are not going to be deliberating this matter with a view of taking a decision this way or that way.
Chair, mine was on the issue of the revenue and expenditure budget of the state diamond trader as to how it talks to the straight man. And maybe I was answered, but I didn't quite get it. We are requested that if it's possible, perhaps if we just get a summary of how the budget talks to the straight man from the CFO.
Thank you, Honorable Began. I think that when the State Diamond Trader appeared here at this committee last year, there was this issue that without the proper allocation, it is difficult to then say, this is what you're costing, and to align the strategy with a budget that is unfunded, because there was this noted point that without there being a proper funding mechanism, then the strategy by and large remains unfunded. But besides that, I indicated earlier that in the growth of the trading business of the State Diamond Trader, we have managed to grow from, for instance, a turnover of around 330 million rands last year to 810 million rands this year. And in that, we were able to make a gross profit of 36 million rands for the trader. I'm talking about from this 810 turnover. And on that basis, we then say that to that extent, therefore, our strat plan is funded in inverted commas, because we don't even know what the National Treasury will end up saying to us, when they see the revenues that we've made in spite of the fact that we did not get any allocation from the state. So to that extent, and to the extent that this last financial year, our operational expenditure was just over 12 million rands. We do believe that, therefore, from the resources that we made, we are able to cover the expenditure that would be this year as well. And so we do have a three-year budget. We do have it, and we have looked at it again. It was looked at on the day that the board was looking at it, at reviewing the strat plan, and they looked at the budget as well. And on the basis of whatever we're making as revenue, said that we will be able to continue because we've got this revenue in spite of the fact that there is no funding from the state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think also in the interest of time, we have received the briefing. We have posed questions, we've got clarities. We're at a stage where we were supposed to be deciding, but I'm not going to pose the question to you because we're not making the quorum. It means unless and until someone else comes in, there's about what? We're running short of two members for us to be able to adopt, to approve this strat plan. So, but I think for now, let's put it aside and move to the regulator. Whilst they're setting up, can we, ladies and gentlemen, grab a cup of tea? I don't know if it's not cold. Just for 5 minutes.
Thank you. Okay.
Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, let's resume our meeting by immediately allowing the regulator to talk to us on their state plan, and mindful of time, we'll have to navigate in a manner that will allow us also to deal with PASA in this process. Over to you, regulator.
Thanks, Jefferson. The chief executive will take the house through your presentation, and we will come in during question time when it is necessary. Thanks.
Let's welcome you, Jefferson.
I
lamented last time.
I feel welcome.
We lamented last time, but indeed you made up for that.
And you promised me the program of the year.
Absolutely.
And of the remaining two quarters.
Absolutely. The issue is that we're dealing with 3 monthly terms.
Yes.
But you will get one just before we come back from recess.
Thanks, sir.
So that you can be able to plan your work ahead.
I will be very obliged.
Thanks a lot. Over to you, CEO.
Thank you very much. As we have said, in the interest of time, I'm going to try to run, but I'm not going to leave salient points. I'm going to try and concentrate on the issues. My presentation will be based on first the background, which I'll run through quickly. The relevant service delivery outcomes. This is from the national priorities. And then the strategic objective, which is the corporate strategy itself, but I'm not going to put this on the screen. I have summarized it in this presentation. I'm not going to put the whole corporate screen on the screen. I've summarized it on critical objectives. Business plan of the SAD PMR, budget allocation, and finally remarks. The regulator, as we are all aware, was established in 2007 as a Schedule 3A entity. I don't want to start from the board time. I'm studying as when it was a regulator. And, of course, its main function is to regulate the diamonds and precious metal industries in terms of those three acts that have been mentioned there. Our vision is to regulate for business excellence, and our mission is to render regulatory service by ensuring compliance with legislation, skills transfer, business development support, equitable access to resources, and local beneficiation. And our values We believe in integrity, respect, time management, accuracy, and consistency. These are the relevant outcomes that the SADPMR have identified from the national priorities as the ones that we can make an impact on. The first one is creating decent employment through inclusive economic growth. The second one is vibrant, equitable, sustainable rural communities with food security for all, create a better South Africa and contribute to a better and safer South Africa, and an efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service and empowered, fair and inclusive citizenship. These are priorities from the national thing. I've just put them here so that when we go to our objective, we can actually link them as to how we are going to try and achieve these priorities or outcomes. We have identified five key strategic objectives. The first one is to ensure competitiveness, sustainable development, and job creation in the diamond and precious metals industry. The second one is to ensure effective transformation of the diamond and precious metal sectors. Third one is to ensure equitable access to resources for local beneficiation. And the fourth one is to ensure compliance with the legislative requirements, with the last one being to improve organizational capacity for maximum execution of brilliance. This is making reference to technology. I believe that the corporate strategy was distributed. So when I talk, the details are actually in the corporate. I've just summarized things. The details are in the corporate. I'm not going to go to the targets and those things. I'm just going to go to the activities that we are going to embark on in order to try and contribute or achieve the outcomes as identified by National. On the first strategic objectives, which we say that we are going to ensure competitiveness, sustainable development, and job creation in the diamond and precious metal industries. What we are going to do is we are going to facilitate business development in the diamond and precious metals beneficiation, and we are also going to facilitate and issue beneficiation licenses. Through this, we can be able to actually create additional jobs that are needed. As we all know that the key objective now for government is to create jobs. When we facilitate business development, we mean that we are definitely going to come down and see how we can assist the integration of entrepreneurs, which eventually will be able to be to open up businesses that will be sustainable and therefore increase the job opportunities. The second one is to ensure effective transformation of the diamonds and precious metal sectors. We are doing it, but this is our commitment throughout. We are going to process and issue licenses in line with the broad-based charter. We have put it as broad as it is, to say with the line with the broad-based charter. But critical, it's what I've just mentioned, to create entrepreneurs in the beneficiation sector. Remember that it's only through beneficiation that you can create jobs. If we talk about transformation, let me not go into that one. I think it will come next. The second one is to ensure equitable access to resources for local beneficiation. We are going to embark on a marketing strategy to increase client base. We have already started that. I can just report to you that as I have promised in our last meeting with the committee, we have expanded. Our building is about to be finished, and this is where we have to market ourselves by increasing a client base. We want people in other African countries to come and use us. This will also help to avail the problem that is prevailing now, access to rough diamonds. If we get the other diamond producing countries to bring their rough here, there will be enough rough for people to can choose from. We will also facilitate the market of polished diamonds. At the moment, we have complaints that this industry is a closed one. Those that are already in the business have got their own customers. So what we are going to do, those who will be polishing in the future, we are going to use the internet to actually assist them in marketing there. So this new DEC that we have alluded to, it's going to function by also facilitating this cut and polished diamonds. We are going to facilitate the buying and selling of diamonds. We are already doing it. We are just going to do it more. As you know, that we are the focal point for export, import, but also for tender system that we take care of it at our field. Now, on the strategic objective 4, we are going to ensure compliance with legislative requirements. So there's a number of activities that we're going to do there. The first one is we're going to conduct inspection in both the diamonds and precious metal sectors. This is very important, Chair. When you conduct inspection, you make sure that what is legislative requirement, such as the 2080 rule, people must beneficiate. If you don't do inspection, you cannot enforce that. So we're going to enforce that by doing inspection and getting records, and then we can say to people, we are not doing it according to the license that you are given. We're going to conduct workshops to inform and educate the diamond and precious metals industry. This is ongoing. We've already started. We have started with workshops. We have gone to Kimberley. We've gone to Bloemfontein. And we are still going to continue to make sure that the people understand and also understand the government key priorities. We are also responsible to verify value of all diamonds offered to state diamond trader by producers. The state diamond trader has got a function to choose the 10%, but we as a support, we have to check the value that the producer gives to the state diamond trader. We use our GDV to check if that is a fair market value that has been put into place. If there's a if there's a problem, it goes to the IDV, Independent Diamond Trader. Verify the value of all unpolished diamonds imports. That's what we do on a normal basis. We check the values of these imports when they come here, and then we identify, describe, and value exhibits confiscated by SAPS, and complete court affidavits. We are required now and then to come and verify the exhibits by SAPS, whether it's really diamonds, and then we also determine the value of that before they can actually go to court. And we end up by completing an affidavit to that effect, that these are diamonds and these are worth so much. We participate in the KPC review visit mission and special envoys. We facilitate the registration of exports and imports of diamonds in line with KPCS statutes. These are records and they go into the KPCS actually website. If anybody wants to see some of the records, they can actually go to the KPCS website and they can see everybody who's a member of the KPC, they can see their statistics. We implement the national value strategy. This is a national call. It has to be done. We manage revenue expenditure, assets, and liability effectively and efficiently. Strategic objective number 5, to improve organizational capacity for maximum execution of brilliance. We have a project that we are supporting, Mintech, on a diamond provenance lab with technical expertise. This provenance lab, I think this project we have also discussed about it. It's in its third year now. I think it was targeted for 5 years. The project is still going on. We are getting reports on a regular basis, on a quarterly basis. This is a project whereby the fingerprinting or the footprint of the diamonds have been determined in order to can see if these diamonds come from a conflict area or whatever. This will be very supportive to the Kimberley Process Certification Scheme. We are continuing this project. We also compile the precious metal supplier database for beneficiators. We don't have this supplier database for beneficiators, so we have met with various companies, and then we are busy determining that database, which will help the beneficiators to see the precious metal supplier database. We provide technical insight, advice, and research on diamonds and precious metals generally. We monitor and analyze prices to adjust the GDV diamond price group. When the GDV do their work, they have to base it on something. There's what they call the price book. Every month, they go into the internet, they look at the prices, the market prices all over the world, and that is how they determine their, what we call the price book. And when they do their evaluation, they use that. We develop and implement human resource plan. As I have said, Chair, this we didn't have this plan. It's under development, and it's a requirement that we have to have this plan. We are busy developing that plan, and we're going to implement it. We develop and implement an information management system. We are busy developing a new system, particularly that we have expanded, and we are including quite a number of new technological things in it. We develop communication strategy, plan and policy. These things were not there, so we have worked on them now. We are putting them into place. The security procedures, we had the security policy, but not the security procedures. We are developing them. And of course, we align budget to approved strategy. Our allocation this year, in this current financial year, was 53.6 million. In the next financial year, we're anticipating 68.7, 72.9. We are looking at the way the growth is going, 3% to 5%. And our challenges is the shrinking budget allocation. If I can go back to the allocation, we have requested a little bit more than the 53 that I have reflected, but we were allocated in the region of 40 million. The other 13 million is what would come from our own charges that we charge. Now, we are saying there is a challenge in the shrinkage because for the past 3 years, there's a trend. It looks like we're getting allocated 40 million. But we have a plan that we're going to try and embark on to see how we can improve the situation. And of course, like the old board, we'll only have to charge because we are now rendering a free service. And the type of service that we are rendering actually all over the world, it has been charged. So we are the only ones that are actually offering it free. So we are going to look into charging some fees to augment the allocation from National Treasury. Complexities with regards to the beneficiation of precious metals. I think I'm not going to say much on this. Maybe my chairperson will say more because he's in the platinum industry. The reference here in the complexities is actually meant more on the platinum, that it's not easy for anybody to come into this industry based on its complexity. It also has got intellectual property right, where it is owned by certain people, this strategy. For an example, your Germany, your Japan are the ones that actually knows how to beneficiate more. There's also complexity in the machinery that is used, the capex. So it's not an easy one, such as the diamonds, gold. Yes, it is happening already, but the platinum. But we have started also an engagement with platinum producers. We have had a meeting recently, and we are still going to, it's an open thing. We are still going to discuss because the reference has been made to Japan and so on. So we have started that collaboration and to see how we can actually break this thing in order that other players, small players, can also be able to come in. Lack of access of rough diamonds by beneficiators, I think I touched on this one, Chair. Our strategy is, right now, there's an outcry. While we have a DEC, which its capacity is not so efficient, but while we have it, there seems to be a problem of overpricing by people who've got money. When I say overpricing, please understand me, that when the parcels are there, there are people who've got money who bid a higher price, and the normal people cannot compete with them. What we are intending to do in the future, because we have increased the capacity of the viewing rooms, we are going to dedicate certain viewing rooms just for the beneficiators. So we are working on that one, so that no one can come and compete with them. Let it just be there in those rooms. Gaps in legislation and litigations. The department is working on this. There are some amendments that they are working on. They will be soon submitted, but I can report to you while there are still these gaps in legislation. Recently, we have been winning cases where the constitutionality of these legislations were taken to court. That makes us feel better, that those gaps, they are not as much as people would think, that it would cause a total collapse. We have been winning cases recently. And that's about it from me, Chair. Thank you very much. I will take questions.
Thank you. There you have the briefing from the regulator, honorable members. Let's engage. Honorable Schmidt, honorable Hululu, honorable Bigani, in that way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Three issues. One is, we've heard the report by the state diamond traders saying that there's been an increase in the overall turnover, I think it is, from 300 million to 800 million. So I suppose one would expect a concurrent increase in beneficiation, because that's exactly what the legislation is intended to do. And my question basically is, what percentage of those diamonds bought from producers and then sold by the state diamond trader has in fact been cut and polished in South Africa? Because those percentages should be available, if I understand the strategic objectives of the ADPMR, especially Objective 2 and Objective 3. So what percentage of those diamonds are in fact exported, and what percentage of those diamonds sold by state diamond trader are in fact cut and polished? Which brings me to the next question is, has there been an increase in what we call the diamond and cutting and polishing workshops, there's one in Kimberley, centres I think is the word called, for a combined attempt to cut and polish diamonds. I know there's one open in Kimberley, but has there been a concurrent increase in activities leading to those kind of cutting and polishing? Then the third issue, just to come back to the issue raised with the state diamond trader early on, there's been an allegation made also that the minister at one stage intervened in the minutes of the South African Diamond Producers and Mineral Resources, your own organization's minutes keeping, and the fact that a parcel imported by Ms. Linda McCartney were to be removed from the minutes. Now, that in itself, I'm just confirming whether that is in fact so, whether it was in fact removed, and whether you in fact know where that diamonds are at the moment, that parcel of diamonds, whether it's been, as the regulator, whether that's been offered for trade, and whether you know where it is at the moment. Thanks.
Thank you, Honorable Hololu.
Thank you very much. Two quick ones. As government, we are talking about job creation, obviously, and I just want to check with the entity if there is any lessons that they have learned from countries such as Germany, Japan, that is in terms of the beneficiation of these precious metals like diamond, because we don't do any beneficiation in those products like diamond. Is there anything that we have learned from those countries so that we can assist our own to beneficiate in those products? That would be the first one. The second one, actually, I just want to check the criteria that would be used in issuing out the licenses for this beneficiation. Who are you going to give those licenses to? What would be your criteria? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bigani.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I think mine is more of a comment, because I'm noticing a common way of presenting from the state diamond trader, that in as much as it's an entity that also should be serving the public, you generally find that there's very little detail in terms of what exactly are you saying in terms of job creation? What exactly are you saying in terms of assisting the ordinary small miner down on the ground and making things easier for them? part of your plans do not really indicate or go into detail into how involved are you going to be in terms of community involvement in developing our very own people. And when you talk about having different jobs for them, what exactly do you mean by that? If there's going to be workshops or training in relation to that, for who, where, and how, and what are your time frames or plans, detailed plans in relation to community development. And also, Chair, I think in terms of the threat plans that are being presented to us also, it's always very vague. For example, you are clearly indicating when you started in 2007. But from 2007 until now, there's no clear indication of what were the challenges then, what were the developments, what improved, what didn't really improve, you know, as an indication. And you find that your strat plan talks to us in such a way as though you are now creating this very new entity, and yet you've always been there, so you should be working from somewhere. Yes, we understand the challenges of finances, but I think the finances should also be an indication of how are you then going to augment your present situation to the past, where you failed or where you've passed even, you know, and how you're going to go forward in terms of the decreasing budget that you're indicating. So I think it's important that such things should come out, Chair, because we are here representing the people, especially small-scale miners, who are so desperate to get these licenses, who are so desperate to get these jobs, to get trained as well. But very little is always said. We are always worried about the economy and what we are going to benefit and so on at a higher level. Whereas the initial people who need the jobs at ground level are not really clearly indicated as how are they accommodated, because I think your very presence as a South African diamond and precious metals regulator, the idea is that you should actually be serving the community. That is the main thing, Chair, that I wanted to contribute to.
Thank you very much. just on your strategic objective 3, you made mention in your first bullet point that you want to include other countries. Well, what would this entail? Would it be importing, you know, the stones from those countries? If so, do you have financial muscle to can be able to do that? The second question would be on objective, strategic objective 4, on the inspections. Quite an interesting situation when you talk about going out and conducting the actual inspection processes. Are you adequately capacitated to do this? Do you have a group of inspectors that are working for yourselves? And if so, plus minus how many? Finally, when you made reference to beneficiation, you are raising under challenges a possibility of a problem that would arise when it comes to particular platinum. And it makes me worried, because when we talk beneficiation, we also look at values of those commodities. Platinum is one of those highly valued commodities. Now, if you're indicating to us that we may not be able to beneficiate that commodity, then it's a worrisome. And also, platinum is in abundance in this country. Would that mean that we will remain, you know, major exports of platinum in the country? So, which would present to us with a problem. Although we have not set aside in terms of what details are contained in the beneficiation strategy, because it's just been approved by cabinet. It has not found its way to us as yet. But we really need to look at what commodities are targeted there, but we would think in our own view that platinum should form part of the equation because of its value and because of the fact that it is in abundance within the country. Would you care to respond to all those questions, please?
Thank you, Chair. If I start with the first question of whether there has been an increase in beneficiation given the presentation by State Diamond Trader, I think we must just go back and remember what was said there. The State Diamond Trader buys 10% of the run of mine. not everything, and I think 47 percentages, what is cuttable. Now, that necessarily cannot say that because they've got this much, that all of it is going to be beneficiated. It's a problem. That is why she even said they also determine some means of getting rid of that those that are uncuttable, to get some people that can buy them and do whatever they can do, which is will be exporting them. We call them your India goods. So I cannot, the numbers that he has given you of the cartages does not justify that they were all of it was beneficiated. It's a problem because of the run of mine. What percentage has been exported, I don't know whether you are referring to from the state diamond trader or now unfortunately I don't have this figure now, what was exported, but state diamond trader does not export, its clients do export. It's not the state diamond trader. State diamond trader buys from the producers and they distribute to clients or site holders. I think that covers the beneficiation part as well. The Kimberley cut and polishing, I think it comes to where you mentioned. No, it's not that one. We have started a project with the Deputy Minister of getting into all those incubators which had actually collapsed or were not going. Kimberley is one of them. We are working on it. At the moment, I cannot say there is an increase because we are trying to obtain the supply of RAF. This is one of the problems in order to actually waken up all those site holders that have collapsed. Kimberley is one of them, but we have started a collaboration with the government there to see how we can actually improve the situation. The allegations that the minister intervened on the diamonds of Linda, I didn't understand this question. Minister did nothing. I mean, We are working on the administrative administration that we alluded to earlier. We did receive those diamonds. Yes, they were put on a tender. We do more imports and exports at the same time. Other countries, African countries, they do more export than importing. South Africa is the only one in the continent that do more of both imports and exports. So we imported those diamonds. We released them to the client. They came later into the system for tender system, and they finished their period. They are in the hands of the client now. They were not exported.
And the question on the minister's intervention was whether the minister influenced one way or the other the recording of minutes that involved the diamonds by the chairperson.
The chair, I'm chairman of the board, and I own up to the minutes. Whatever is recorded there, and the secretary will record the minutes, records them for me, and I go through them. And if ever there's anyone who would instruct that the certain portion of the minutes be expunged from the minutes, that order or request would be addressed to me. Either directly or directly, and I have never been in communication with the minister nor the deputy minister on this issue. And the minutes, as recorded, reflect the true reflection of the issue as it was discussed then on the, I think, the meeting of the 4th, if I'm not wrong, I think the 4th of May, which, and this issue was not on the agenda. I had just been informed about it before we got into the board meeting, and I just tabled it for noting as there was further inquiries to be made about those diamonds, and clarity was sought by the chairperson because Advocate Mononela had been at a meeting where this issue was discussed in Dubai again, and therefore clarity was given and the matter rested as it has been discussed today. So I would take a serious offense if somebody alleges that I expunged the portion of the minutes, because that would be fraudulent and forgery.
Thank you very much. Please continue with other questions.
The other question from honorable member was that what what have we learned from countries like Germany and Japan? We have just recently, as I've said, started an engagement with the producers. This is where we learn that Germany can do this, Japan can do this, and we have started that. We haven't learned. We have to engage them also to find out as the users, as the end users of these products. Criteria used in issuing of licenses. There is a criteria. I think maybe let me give the general manager licensing to say for you to get a beneficiation license, this is what is required from you. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. The criteria used for obtaining a license in terms of the Diamonds Act or the Precious Metals Act, it's actually a criteria that are part of the regulations. The first one being that a person must obtain a police clearance certificate. In other words, a person should be having no record of criminal, of whatever. And then the second one is that a person must also obtain a SARS clearance certificate, that of business that the person is paid, his or her juices in terms of the laws of the Republic. And the person must also have a premises. In other words, a premises where we will be able to check whether either the person has a lease agreement or he owns that particular property. And there, subsequent to those, criteria that I just mentioned, the person must then lodge the application, and then we will do the qualitativeness and also quantitativeness. In other words, all documentation has been complied with. Thereafter, there will be inspection. We will go to the premises that business is gonna is going to be conducted there, and then based on the inspectory report, then the matter will now go to the CEO. Having gone through all the the channels, in other words, your chief licensing officer, manager licensing officer, and also general manager, and then also then thereafter, if the recommendations are positive, then they will go to the CEO, who will decide whether, based on all information supplied, is the person eligible for the license or not. These are the criteria. They are mainly found in the legislative. It's a regulated matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. The other one from honorable member. I think it was more of comments, but there are questions in it as to what informs our job creation and how involved are we in the workshop that we are talking about, for who it is and where. The first question of job creation, if you just go back to my presentation, remember what I said in the beginning, to say that as it is core and critical that we create or we contribute to the national call of creating job opportunities, beneficiation can be used to do that. The problem with beneficiation to advance it now that is on the table is the supply of rough. Now, as I've said, that we are embarking now on a process of also communicating with the producers over and above their use of tender, the DEC, our tender system. How can they also offer some diamonds to the small scale guys? That collaboration and engagement is an ongoing thing. There are a number of meetings that have been held to see how we can bridge this. If you have enough supply of rough, you will be able to can create jobs. Remember that during the economic crunch, during the commodity crunch, a lot of these sideholders, beneficiation sites, were closed because the number one, the industry nearly, let me not use the word collapse, but there was very little of coming from the producers because all the production declined. So it is we are working on this and we are serious about it. But if you go, remember when I started, I said the details are in the corporate strategy itself. If you go to the corporate strategy, you'll even see the numbers that we are committing to say this is what we're going to, we are committing to so many jobs to create within this financial year. And we have to achieve, because it's outcome-based, we have no alternative, we have to. But we have a plan as to how we're going to do it. And one of the plans is to make an intervention to those schools that are actually offering courses for beneficiation, like your jewelry and so on, and identify clients there whom we can actually mentor and create entrepreneurship from those people. We are also speaking to industry that once we have also taken them from to a particular area, they must also assist by putting in the practical side. And there are those industry members who are willing to do that. This is how we are going to be involved. The workshops, we are targeting new entries and the previously disadvantaged, but also the existing ones, so that they understand the requirements of the legislation. Because remember that in terms of the broad-based socio-economic charter, the industry is also required to contribute to these things that we are alluding to. So ours will be more of a facilitation, but using the existing industry so that they do their social part of the social responsibility. Way forward on finance, we have... as I've said, previously the board, when it was still in the private hands, they used to charge levies. When you put the tender there, there was a certain percentage that you have to charge. Now, government, when it took over, this was not factored in. It's now catching up with us. But we are busy also. We have plans now to approach National Treasury to allow us to have some minimal charges that would help us to defer our cost. We have very high costs in terms of insurance and other related things. So we are going to ask National Treasury to allow us so that when the National gives us their allocation, we can augment that allocation. Chairperson, your question about include other countries. If you can just come, I've got the other question, but this one, what did you say about including other countries?
The question was around whether this involves importing those countries, and if so, do we have funding for that?
Thank you, Chair. It's clear. As I've said, that we are a focal point for the KPCS for imports and exports, and I think in Africa we're the only... No, Botswana is trying to create something, but we're the only country in Africa that have a tender system that could be competitive to other global tender systems. Now, we don't need to buy diamonds. All we need to do is to do facilitation. Import the diamonds, come here on a tender system. People can buy diamonds from here, and they can export them wherever they are. So we'll be more of an importer than anything. The second one...
Just as a follow-up, Chair, to what the CEO has said on import and export as a facilitation, we have been in discussions with the minister, as the board itself and the minister, to participate in the, or even become a catalyst in creating a free economic zone, a free trade zone, and we know that the Department of Trade and Industry has been engaging various sectors of the economy in this country in that regard. And we think that with the international effort that we have becoming the gateway to Africa, particularly to diamond dealing countries, neighboring countries, we are well positioned in that regard. When guys come here to go to Botswana, they come through South Africa. When they go to Zimbabwe, they come through South Africa. So we could become a very, a facilitator in that regard. And that will help us to attract even more people from outside and their goods into the country. And that will create a lot of turnaround of various trades, and it will have a spin-off effect in terms of job creation also. So that is, and we have seen Botswana doing it and people coming here, landing here and driving to Botswana or chartering helicopters and planes, small charter planes to Botswana to go and do the same thing. And whereas we are well positioned to do so. So that is an important thing. But we cannot do it alone as a regulator. We can only become a player in that regard. Treasury is one of them. SARS is one of the players. Trade and Industry Department is one of them.
Thank you, Chair. In actual fact, our target now, the African countries that we are targeting are those that are participating in ADPA. We are a participant supporting the minister, so we are also trying to influence through that that forum. The other question was on the adequacy for inspectors, whether we are adequate enough. Yes, we are, Chairperson. We have increased the number of inspectors. Previously, in a year, back in a year, the we are not sufficient, but now we have increased. We have diamond inspectors, 7, and we have for precious metals, 6 people. That is enough for us to can run the country. The other question is the platinum beneficiary. I would want to ask my chairman, please, to comment on the platinum.
Yeah, so he's throwing a curveball to me. He did not consult with me, that's okay. But let me attempt to just give a perspective of the platinum sector. There are two levels. Yeah, we're talking about it was downstream. I mean, it was beneficiation in precious metals, platinum particularly. It is mineral processing from run of mine. Concentrating, smelting, and refining it, and that is that process, and that is mainly been done by mining companies who are mining the resource itself. Some of them do run of mining up to, and they send it to other big producers for concentrating up to refining. Some of them mine and do concentrating and send the concentrate to the smelters and refiners. So, and the bulk of small and medium-sized producers do that. They concentrate and sell the concentrate to big producers, dominated mainly by Anglo Platinum as well as Impala Platinum. And they refine subsequently and they sell the metal. And the participation in the process could be at concentrate level or could be at refining, but you know the basket metals after refining at a particular percentage of spot, and the regulator does have the powers, legislative powers, to issue refining smelting licenses, refining licenses, but where do you get the run of mine, where do you get the concentrate to do the smelting? Because that capacity resides currently with the big producers. So you need to have the run of mine to participate in that chain, in that value chain up to refining. And even many of the small producers and medium producers have got an offtake agreement, an evergreen offtake agreement with the big producers to smelt and refine for them. So even if you were to engage the small guys, you would not get it because it's already locked in. It's locked in an agreement or in agreements with the big producers. So that is the challenge that we're raising. However, you pointed it correctly to say we're still waiting for a final beneficiation strategy from government because it's with cabinet at the moment that will release some of the things and enable us to step in and say now we have got a policy framework upon which we can act. Now, the second leg of beneficiation really in platinum is the downstream one, auto catalytic converters, jewelry, you name quite a number of them. One of the important things, handicaps, is obviously technology. Fortunately, in autocatalytic converters, we do have small ones. One of them is in KZN in Durban. But we have the market, that is the other thing. The motor industry in South Africa is an assembly point rather than a manufacturing point, and it's owned by foreign companies who do have their own auto-catalytic converter industries overseas, or their preferred customers, for example, in Germany, where it's a big, it's a big auto-catalytic converter for platinum, particularly. So those are the challenges that we are facing here. Even the supply thereof, we don't have the supply thereof, because that metal, you find that big producers sell to five to seven single big customers, and the other guys will distribute to the end users. So even their supply is locked in there. So we need to break that to promote beneficiation and promote job creation, because that is important for us to participate even in the final value chain, because we cannot continue in a way where we produce for other people overseas. But we need a legislative framework. I think it's long overdue. Otherwise, we as a regulator have got very little powers that can enable us to break the chain and start acting in a way that is expected of us to promote job, to promote economic development. Thanks.
I think I'm done, but I think there's still a question, maybe follow up to my chairperson, I'm not sure. Yes, I am done.
What follow up is there? Yes, Honorable Schmidt.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think what the chairman has now raised is very important. I want to link it up. I want to criticize, but I want to make a point. Because on the one side, the chairman raises very important issues with regards to the beneficiation strategy. And I've seen a document dated the 8th of June, which is I got yesterday. I'm not sure whether it's the final version. I haven't had time to read it, but
lucky you, got it yesterday.
It's on the website. Well, from the website. So maybe it's the version which has been discussed and adopted by our cabinet. I just need to read and see. But there's a beneficiation plan which the portfolio committee needs to understand. And needs to understand the input with the chairman, because one cannot say one can look at diamonds and then influence the beneficiation strategy quite easily. It's a different thing when you have platinum, and the composite argument of it becomes very difficult to break that value chain, especially if you've got big business and contracts and things. But there's 10 streams, I think, 10 different concentration issues in the beneficiation strategy. And I would suggest, Mr. Chair, that in future we get hold of that document, we discuss it, and we get the input from, like, the chairman to understand what it is that we should be doing in beneficiation, what we can do and what we can't do, because the chairman would be able to indicate you can't just break an agreement. I mean, it's going to cost, you just can't do it. So there's limits to anything. But on the same line, I'd like to criticize the SADPMR, because I would expect it, quite honestly, I would. If the purpose of your entity is to ensure growth and jobs, then one would have figures to say, I can. This is how the increase in the turnover of the SDT has increased jobs. This is how many percentage-wise diamonds have been sold to DEC, or percentage-wise state diamond trader has sold to the cutters and polishers. That's percentage referred to DEC for export. Those figures I do not find, and I'm not sure who to get those figures from, because it's between the FDT, the DEC, which I think you control, and the SADPMR or the department, which of those four entities would have the figures saying that's a total production, that is a 10%, this is what SDT has offered to the local producers, this is what SDT has exported, this is what has been exported via DEC, this is what has been beneficiated, this is what our objective is. Those figures I've never ever seen, and I don't know, it's like a kicking a ball. You try and pin down one individual, the next says, well, it's other departments or other entities' responsibility. I don't know whether you can give any guidance on what I've just explained.
Do you care to respond to that?
Let me just answer the first part, and the CEO will answer the most difficult one. About you can't just break an agreement. Yes, I mean, you don't break an agreement, you deliberately break an agreement. But if it is in a national interest and parliament, government drafts policies and parliament legislates in the national interest and for the purpose of economic development and job creation, remember that mineral resources of this country reside in South Africans, and if they regulate that legislatively, it will naturally have an impact on some of the agreements, unfortunately. And those agreements naturally will have to be re-looked to accommodate that legislative provision in order to ensure that what has been fundamental in the Act, at least one of the fundamental objectives of the Act, is beneficiation, is being realized in the end. So I don't think it will be a big problem in terms of agreement to say now the Act has come, has superseded some of the private agreements that have been entered into between either the producers and the end users or the beneficiaries, wherever they might have been, except South Africa. So I don't think government should be hamstrung by the possibility that certain of the agreements would be rendered a little bit ineffective. But let me hand over to the chief executive to answer the other part of the question.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think, first of all, let me just indicate that we are a focal point, as I've said. We are responsible for all the figures as to what has been exported, what has been imported. We do have those figures. But perhaps, Chair, I was not prepared to because I did not see from those figures, because I was just concentrating on my strategic document or corporate strategy that I was supposed to. SDT also has got the records. We also have the records of SDT as to, in terms of the percentage that has been beneficiated. But I think I would take this question as a little bit hijacked, because I was not expecting that question to be asked here. But if you go to the annual report, there are figures in the annual report. The draft annual report is coming. It will also give you the current status as to statistics.
Responsible entity.
Okay. I think honourable members, we've exhausted the discussions on this strat plan, and safe to say that the matter of beneficiation, as we see that, is uppermost in the regulator's priorities. We will, as soon as indeed that document is released, we will spend some time. Not only to understand what is contained in the beneficiation strategy being briefed by the department, but also to understand the processes that are involved in beneficiation, so that when we take legislative steps, we are very much clear. Because indeed, beneficiation of our minerals is a matter that has been spoken about over a long period of time, and it's only now that it is basically taking a very clear shape, in that the minister has submitted the strategy to cabinet and cabinet has approved. So it has to come here. Out of that, we'll see what legislative requirements are there, so that we can then deal with the part of the law. So let's thank you very much, the regulator and the state diamond trader. Wamuvi, you want to say something?
Chair, I just wanted to make a quick remark that we must not be confused with the miners who are responsible for production. We only regulate the downstream. We don't regulate the mining part of the commodities.
Okay. Thank you very much. It's the same situation, honorable members. We can't even pose the question of the acceptance because we don't make the quorum. Let's please ask Mpaka to set themselves up so that we can handle them, as they have been waiting since 9 o'clock. honourable members, whilst PASA is setting itself up so that we can kill two birds with one stone, you did receive some SMSs, disturbing SMSs, I must say, about the cancellation of our strat plan workshop. Because most of you have already set time aside and got yourselves geared towards that workshop. I can reduce that simply down to literally administrative bunga. That's the main reason why we're not going. It's the main reason why we're not holding our workshop. If you would recall, in the program that we have adopted, these dates were reflected there. And the fact that nothing has been done until around May or June is mind-boggling. And I've raised this with the committee section manager, and I'm still going to take it forward. I've asked the committee secretary here to give me a report of what happened. She did so, and I'm starting that report, but I'm saying to you that firstly, immediately when we approve a program here, as we are going to do when we come back, you expect that committee section must act on that and not wait until the 11th hour. Secondly, we were told about some committee that exists which is looking after interest of training. It's absolute ineffective body. I can say so. Because the officials there are basically playing the game in the manner in which they want to. They dilly-dallied, they have not been giving responses. When they give responses, they sent the committee secretary back to do A, B, C, and D. They got back to say we're not funding this, we're funding only that. No, your workshop cannot be outside of Cape Town. You see, it's a matter that I think as Parliament we've been dealing with, and we're going to deal with it head on. It can't be that officials decide our programs in Parliament. We fail because we allow administration to dictate to us what to do. And when we go and face the public out there, we will be told of not having delivered on matters. For instance, this workshop, it was crucial because who knows? When we come back, we might be hit with amendments on pieces of legislation. Each and every entity that presents here, they're telling us about gaps in legislation. They're telling us about the work that they're doing to bring forward amendments. Where are we going to be? Let's say come back in July or in August, we receive amendments. How are we going to be able to handle those amendments? How are we going to process them if we have not been to this workshop? And if needs be, it means I would speak to the speaker, because I would not take this lightly at all. It can be as a result of administrative bungle. Our work gets basically, because by yesterday lunchtime, there was no answer on whether we're getting the funding or not. I think even now, is there an answer now? No, not. So therefore, that's why I took a decision that we must cancel, because we can't deal with it, with matters in that fashion. And I'm saying this is not a new thing, because earlier on, when we adopt a program, you are saying to the functionaries, this is what the committee is going to handle until we change it ourselves. Otherwise, you don't have to sit and relax and wait until such time that, you know, things fall into the head before you could then, you know, act. So the matter is going to be raised and raised sharply so that we get it addressed. Otherwise, this committee that is said to be taking interest in terms of our training, we are going to rubbish it, because that's what we have to do, because that's what it deserves, you know, because you can't say you have a service and then the next thing you're throwing people from pillar to post before that service could be actually accessed. So I'm saying, therefore, that we're apologizing that the workshop has been postponed. We will see in the next term by when
must we hold that workshop? And of course, we spoke about the program in the last meeting, where we narrated issues that are still outstanding. Unless there's a comment on that, would allow PASA. If there's a comment, I'll allow the comment. Honorable Bigani.
Chairperson, if I'm not mistaken, we had a similar problem years so back. And the fact that also we had made the decision of the first venue was not based on what the committee section would say is important, but it was based on our own work. So if it's also possible, let that be reviewed as well. And in the process of reviewing, Chair, we support the fact that perhaps it's time now that we do have a confrontational meeting with them on behalf of the committee. We speak up for ourselves instead of you every time having to go back to them, because we don't know where issues end. They come on a platform where they come and meet us as a committee, and we try and outline to them how they are disorganizing us, number one. And secondly, the fact that the decisions that are made are based on what they have said will be allowed in terms of our oversight work. And this is part of it. This is not ordinary training where we feel that we need to go and get some form of being taught general issues of parliament, but it concerns issues of legislation in mineral resources. And as you've mentioned, challenges that are coming up right now in terms of legislation, based on also the last, for example, as but one example, the Youth League's NGC. And we thought that we'd have that platform to actually address some of those issues.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I find it unacceptable. You know, we've been knowing about this workshop for at least a week. And if the administration can't get their own documents or authorization policy in place, you know, it's unacceptable. The other thing is, I would implore us to continue with the workshop, because eventually, if there are to be amendments to the MPRDA and other legislation, it needs to be understood within a bigger framework. And I don't think none of us understand the bigger framework quite with respect. There's a lot of legislation, and the consequence of it is enormous. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, quite right. Honorable Khulul.
Thank you very much. Also, I want to add my voice that really, it's really unacceptable, and this thing needs to be dealt not with, not against, but accordingly by yourself, because really it's disempowering to us. And yeah, that's what I can say. Thank you.
No, very well. Born out of discussions, we will see whether we cannot have it on the very first week of our coming back, so that we are ready to can deal with any proposals. You are right, Honorable Schmidt, because when you deal with the plethora of these acts, you need an insight so that you can then understand better how to respond on proposed amendments. And because you can't just deal with words, you need to deal with what is the political direction aimed through those amendments. What is the economic and social direction that is aimed through those amendments, so that you are able to process them with that knowledge, and instead of E's and R, you know, dotted lines and so forth. But fine, I will take your suggestion on board, Honorable Bigani, that the decision makers, we simply call them before this committee. If we have powers to call people outside of this committee, so do we have powers to call people within this establishment to come and explain to us what is it they're doing. There's this Mr. Mbanlomd Nyigana. I would very much want to meet him. And so we'll create space so that we are able to then address that. PASA, you just were eavesdropping on our internal matters, but the platform is yours. Please take us through.
Thank you, Chairperson.
I wanted to propose that maybe we give them 10 limit because of the time. Thank you, Chairperson. Good afternoon, honorable members. I'm mindful of the time and I'll try to act accordingly. The format that I will follow, Chairperson, is more or less the format used by the previous presenters. I will present our strategic role, mission and vision and functions as a petroleum agency in terms of the Act. Thereafter, I will give you the strategic map with a bit of detail on it, just at the corporate level, and follow that up with comments. The strategic role of the Petroleum Agency, Chairperson, is to contribute to the energy resources of the country by promoting and regulating the exploration and production of the country's natural oil and gas resources. Vision and mission. Our vision is a vibrant upstream petroleum industry in South Africa, and the mission is to promote, facilitate, and regulate the exploration and sustainable development of oil and gas for the benefit of all South Africans. The functions of the agency are as laid out in Section 71 of the Act, which very quickly are to promote onshore and offshore exploration for and production of petroleum, to receive applications for reconnaissance permits, technical cooperation permits, exploration rights and production rights in the prescribed manner, evaluate such applications and make recommendations to the minister, monitor and report regularly to the minister in respect of compliance with such permits and rights, receive, maintain, store, interpret, evaluate, add value to, disseminate, or deal in all geological or geophysical information relating to petroleum submitted in terms of Section 88, to bring to the minister, to the notice of the minister, any information in relation to the exploration and production of petroleum which is likely to be of use or benefit to the state, to advise and recommend to the minister on the need to, by itself, that is by ourselves as the Petroleum Agency, through contractors or through any other state enterprise, carry out on behalf of the state reconnaissance operations in connection with petroleum. These are data collection operations. Collect the prescribed fees and considerations in respect of reconnaissance permits, technical cooperation permits, exploration rights or production rights. Review and make recommendations to the minister with regard to the approval of environmental management plans, environmental management programs, development programs and amendments thereto, and lastly, to perform any other function in respect of petroleum which the minister may determine from time to time. The next slide contains our strategy map.
This is in line with the balanced scorecard. The balance scorecard format,
which lays out your stakeholders first, internal processes, learning and growth, and financial systems. In terms hereof, Chairperson, I'll start right up at the top. I'll start with our purpose, the purpose of the organization of QASA, to promote, facilitate and regulate the exploration and sustainable development of oil and gas for the benefit of all South Africans. Now, who are our stakeholders? Our stakeholders are the government itself, are the explorers. We have internal stakeholders, which start from our board of directors and employees, because these are also stakeholders. And lastly, but certainly not least, the citizens of the country.
The objectives that I will come to later on, as set out in the strategy map, in terms are in line with what our stakeholders require of us. The first one being to ensure responsible oil and gas exploration and production. The second one being to promote exploration for oil and gas. Three, to ensure preservation of and access to data. Four, strategically focused and sustainable organization. The internal processes which we follow in terms of those and as aligned to those objectives are for the first one, to issue rights, permits, ensure sound environmental management and force regulatory compliance, promote industry transformation. That is, for the sake of time, let me quickly go to the detail. But just to finish off on this page, under learning and growth, we've got secure and environment, secure and enabling working environment, which is our fifth objective. And our sixth objective is to ensure financial viability. So what you see on this page is what I'm going to explain further, at 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. To start with the first one, right at the top, to ensure responsible oil and gas exploration and production. The activities are as laid out on this page with the initiative, with the measures or indicators and the targets for 2011-12. First one being process applications. This is one of the most important responsibilities that we have. The initiative, process applications within prescribed or set time frames. And the target is 100% completed within prescribed time frames. We have no leeway in this because these are legislated. Secondly, to monitor compliance with issued rights and permits. And the target is monitoring and enforcement by the agency of compliance by licensees with terms and conditions is carried out 100% in line with legislated and prescribed time frames. Activity to develop and implement regulatory guidelines. The measure here is regulatory guidelines and procedures developed and implemented, which entails consultation process on the guidelines, application guidelines, reporting and sampling guidelines. And this we will do, we had initially proposed the 30th of November 2001, but with the whole issue of shale gas, we are proposing to our board, which will be sitting shortly, that we rather move this for finalization by the 31st of March 2012, because this is going to be impacted on by the task teams that have been set up for shale gas and hydraulic fracturing. Objective number two on that strategic map was promote exploration of oil and gas in South Africa. The activities here are one, conduct geological evaluation of basins. The initiatives, geological evaluation of basins, phased five-year plan to provide a documented understanding of South Africa's basins. The target here is the 31st of March 2012, having moved from the 30th of November. Number two, maintain and update the petroleum resource catalog for South African basins. The initiative, maintain resource catalog for all the basins, and then the indicator is the percentage of resource inventory plan completed by 100% by 31 March 2012. The next one, prepare final document for an extension of the joint South Africa-France extended continental shelf claim up the discovery ridge. Complete extension of submission up the ridge. This we propose to do by the 31st of December 2011. What this refers to is the continental shelf claim that we lodged for the country in 2 years ago, and that we presented to the plenary session of the commission last year, in August of last year.
And we, with the proviso that we would follow up, there is a portion that we are still following up, which is the Discovery Ridge, as a supplement or an addendum to the claim that we have already lodged. This was accepted by the Commission, and we will be presenting that last year, but we will complete this document by the 31st of December 2011. The next one is to promote prospectivity of South African petroleum resources. This is one of our main pillars as a petroleum agency. The promotional plan must be in place, 100% of it, by the 31st of March 2012, and must be completed. Then lastly, under the promotion, to be to investigate South Africa's comparative advantage in attracting explorers. I'm sorry that word has been cut off there, but the word is attracting explorers. The initiative is to investigate and document South Africa's comparative advantage, and we will have as a measure a draft report on South Africa's competitive advantage complete and presented to management by the 31st of December 2011. The next objective is to ensure preservation and access to data. This is the geotechnical data that we are the custodians of, relating to all petroleum resources for the country. The first activity is compiled data activity report for priority Karoo basins. Completed report submitted to RegPro is just our management. So it's another term for our technical management by June 2011. So we should be meeting that deadline by the end of this month. Certainly we have to provide and make the data available in terms of the Act. And percentage of data supplied within agreed time frames must be 100%. Capture metadata for all well data and seismics in the Orange Basin. This is the Orange Basin, is the west coast of the country. Capture metadata for all well data and seismics in the Orange Basin. Percentage of Orange Basin study metadata captured to RegPro approved standards, 100%. Provide web map interface to internal users for all existing petroleum leads and prospects. The indicator is percentage of petroleum leads and prospects in the data catalog at 1 April 2011 available to internal web users. 100% by 31 December 2011. We also purchase and acquire data. Augment existing data through purchase / acquisition / reprocessing. The measure is proposal properly approved and implemented, and the data reprocessed acquired for at least two basins or sub-basins, 100% by the 31st of March 2012. Sorry. And then lastly, to benchmark information systems infrastructure with industry best practice. You must remember that we're competing with other producers and potential producers around the world. So the initiative is to evaluate information systems infrastructure against industry best practice, and the final report with recommendations presented to management by December 2011. The fourth objective is to ensure strategically focused and sustainable organization. First one being, the first activity being to maintain representation with all relevant government and industry bodies, and maintain representation at OPASA, NMDB, BCC, government bodies and other industry bodies, and the target here is 80% attendance at agreed participation activities. Secondly, improve stakeholder relations based on outcomes of 2010 to 11 stakeholder survey. This is a survey we conducted towards the end of the last year. And as a next step for this, we need to develop and implement remedial plans based on the outcomes of the survey, and an approved remedial plan is implemented by the 31st of March 2012. Maintain agency profile. Maintain profile of agency through editorials and articles in targeted strategic publications. And the number of articles created and published, we aim to have 6 articles by the 31st of March 2012. And progress or facilitate statutory establishment and clarify the positioning or the location of the agency. Here, as an initiative, we need to revise the business case and proposals. Our focus here will be the latter part of that paragraph, which is to monitor the legislative process of the MPRDA amendment and the proposed petroleum agency bill. The paragraph starts with revise the business case and proposals to the legislation to align with outcomes of the outcome of discussions between DOE and DMR on agency location. I skipped that because we started doing that by the end of the last year, the last financial year already. So what is important in this financial year is to monitor the legislative process of the MPRDA amendment and the proposed petroleum agency bill. The importance of this also attaches to our financial situation, which I will comment on later. The measure indicator is draft legislation submitted to relevant department, quarterly reports to management and board by 30 June 2011 and 31 March 2012. And certainly to ensure a secure and enabling work environment, here we propose to have an employee value proposition for all staff. The initiative is to craft and educate staff on the employee value proposition, the measure being acceptance by staff of the EVP, 100% of staff informed on EVP through workshop, and the target being that it be prepared and 90% of staff educated by 30 September 2011. And then lastly, to expand and maintain an IT infrastructure which addresses user needs. The initiatives being expand IT infrastructure to meet user needs and then upgraded infrastructure by 30 December 2011. Last but not least is to ensure financial viability for the organization, which links up, as I said, to the earlier one on legislative founding for the petroleum agency. But here we're just focusing on identifying and implementing cost-saving and budgetary mechanisms, the initiatives being to institute cost-saving mechanisms through rigorous budgeting and monitoring processes, the indicator being annual percentage saving on budgeted operating costs, a target of 5% by 31 March 2012 without compromising operations. This will not be on your booklet, Jefferson, but these are just comments that we make as a summary of the above, which are opportunities that we have for this financial year. They could also be threats depending on how everything pans out. The one being the uncertainty on timing of funding. As we have presented to this PPC before, at the moment we continue to fund ourselves through our reserves, because while the Act provides that we shall be funded by the fiscus, this has not happened yet. Our appeals for funding have to date been turned down, but perhaps fortunately we continue to have our reserves for this financial year, for the next financial year, but we will not be able to complete the year 2013 to 14. they will be depleted before the end of that year. The other impact that this has is that in order to stretch the reserves as I have just laid them out, we have to limit our operations. And already we have had to cancel surveys that are necessary to get the data that is needed for us to promote the data that is needed to advise us on the prospectivity of our acreage in the country. So we have to be very frugal with such operations. And of course, this also affects the appointment of staff, staffing positions that we need. At the moment, we are not, even if we've identified a need, a staffing need, we can only appoint people on a 1 to 2 year contractual basis or use interns for those purposes. We've got limitations because we're trying to stretch the funds that we have for as long as we can get an appropriation from the fiscus. The ECSC funding, this refers to the Extended Continental Shelf Claim project funding for the final phase. This has also delayed. We have made a request for a further 22 million, which may end up being a little bit more with the passage of time, in order to complete the project that was entrusted on us by Cabinet, and to ensure that it is, we do everything that is necessary for it to finalize it. There have been administrative / legal hiccups between the two departments, perhaps the Department of Energy in this case, and the Treasury, because there must be concurrence before the Minister of Energy can issue a directive affecting the equalization fund. So simply put, there's been a delay in that regard, but it is being resolved by the Department of Energy. It certainly does affect us because we are the managers of the project, and at times we have had to provide bridge funding for the project. I have previously referred to establishment legislation. Chairperson, you will know that the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act refers to the designation of any agency of state. It does not provide for our establishment per se, and this has led to the Treasury interpretation that while the Act enjoins them to fund whatever agency has been designated to perform the functions that I read out in Section 71 of the Act, the fact that the establishment of the petroleum agency was never done by legislation. There is no Act of Parliament that says the petroleum agency is hereby established. The Act of Parliament merely says the minister shall designate an agent of state. So this has also been the cause of a delay on the part of the Treasury. At the moment, between ourselves and the DMR, we are busy with the legislation that directly establishes the petroleum agency, and this is the opportunity that we have within this financial year. We trust that this will be done, and we're following up on that also because while there have been delays with the amendment of the MPRDA, we do not believe that they should be linked to that. We believe that they should be processed and finalized so that there could be more certainty for the petroleum agency in the performance of its functions. And the last opportunity or threat we have is shale gas exploration. Chairperson, this is a huge potential opportunity for the country, but the petroleum agency, the department in the country will not compromise on its environmental responsibilities. and therefore at this juncture the cabinet and the minister have instituted a moratorium, during which moratorium a thorough study of the impact of the hydraulic fracturing technique will one be studied and recommendations hereon be made for the minister to discuss with cabinet. But this is an area of great excitement for ourselves and the country. And Chairperson, that is the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. There you are, honourable members. The presentation. Yes.
The Petroleum Agency Bill, have you been working on it as mineral resources or was it mainly through energy? I just wanted to get clarity for our sake because...
Not yet there, but please explain.
It's coming through the Department of Energy, of Mineral Resources, I'm sorry. Mineral Resources are working on it together with the amendments to the MPRDA. But as I said... It's mineral resources and not energy. And not the not energy. No.
All right, Honorable Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There seems to be a bit of a disjuncture between being funded or possibly being funded from the equalization fund, which is under the control of the Department of Energy by the Minister of Energy. And you are regulating the upstream oil industry, if I understand it. In other words, you issue the notices, all the permits, etc., etc. So by virtue of your function, you're a Department of Mineral Resources functionary, whereas in terms of your funding, you seem to think that the equalization fund should be the answer, if I understand it correctly, which seems to be at odds. Now, if anything, it seems to me that you should be funded directly from Treasury or via the Department of Mineral Resources budget, which of those two I don't know. But the other thing I'd just like to ask a question about is the fact that there's a difference between a comparative advantage and a competitive advantage, and I'm referring to page 8, the last square at the bottom there. You say draft investigate South Africa's competitive advantage in attracting explorers. Now, the comparative advantage, as I understand correctly, I'm not a linguist, but it seems to be the inherent resources of the country. You've got a comparative. Competitive means you put something in motion to get that comparativeness into competitiveness. In other words, it needs more than just the resources being there. It should be the implementation of the comparative advantage should be the implementation thereof competitive. So I'm not sure if you could just explain to us whether you mean that it should be that PASA's function is to ensure a competitive advantage, in other words, an implementation of it, or whether it is to access the comparative advantage. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Honorable Bigani, and then Honorable
Chair, I'd just like to ask, on page 8, I see your target date under conducting geological evaluation of basins. You had to move your date from the 30th of November 2011, I take it, to 31st of March 2012. Could you give an indication as to what the reasons there too were? Under promoting exploration of oil and gas in South Africa, 25%, the first activity.
Thank you very much. Mine's a clarity-seeking question. Let me thank Tasa for the presentation. It was short and precise. I'm just trying to check here, Chair, on the business strategy objectives. On the business strategy objectives, all of them actually. I see these those percentages there next to the objectives, under objectives. I see 5%, I see 100%, 15%. Is that the target or what is it? Yeah, I just want to check that one. Thank you very much.
Okay. The worrying picture is that of your challenges, threats and opportunities, really. We had thought that by this time you would have resolved the matter of the funding model. And the fact that there's no constitutive act that sets yourselves up, which you are indicating that Treasury is raising from time to time as part of their reluctance to actually fund you. Now, if your reserves are depleting in 2013-2014 financial year, which is indeed quite close, what are your timelines in terms of bringing the bill to us so that then we address one of the concerns that National Treasury has raised with you? The second question related to that would be your funding model, whether that has already been agreed upon between yourselves and the Department of Mineral Resources. And then the third issue relates to your dotted line reporting to energy. It must put you in a very complex situation in terms of being responsible to two ministries. Are there discussions, either through the bill that is being worked out, to clarify the matter absolutely? Not meaning that you would not engage with energy at some point or another because of the nature of your work, but indeed to basically clearly identify your line ministry in the scheme of things. And then that picture indeed is worrying, you see, because you are unable to do the work that you were set out to do. I think when we deal with your bill, we would have to spend more time. I'm glad that you are linking it to the possible amendments on the MPRDA to really clarify the roles that actual roles that you are playing, because we can see in your strategic plan that you are laying out, you know, your focus in terms of your future operations, which is quite fine. But we would need, so that we are able, when we go out on our oversight, to know exactly what is it that we're measuring when it comes to your operations. But that's for the future situation when we're dealing with your bill, so that we can have more insight. But lastly, the matter of the shale gas exploration. We understand that there's still a moratorium in place. Are there any indications of by when this moratorium would be lifted, or how far down the line are you in basically investigating the impact of this shale gas? I'm raising this because we need to cut a fine balance between the preservation of the environment and the actual development of a natural resource endowed to us by God. If you look at the Karoo Cross, you see quite a depressed kind of a geographic area where levels of unemployment are so high, levels of poverty are so high, and underdeveloped kind of an area. Now, surely, we have a responsibility to see, to it, that we strike this balance of
this interest. It's like the demonstrations that took place, when was it, yesterday, where, what is this organization? Greenpeace went to dump coal in front of Eskom's power stations, urging the country to get out of coal. The question begs is, those people who are doing that are people who have got access to electricity. Meanwhile, we have 3 million people that have not yet seen the light in terms of getting access to electricity. Now, whose interest shall we serve? Is the interest of people who have got the service but who are now looking for more luxurious situation? Or is it the interest of people who are still living under promised service delivery? So these matters, they come back to us as public representatives, so that we assist the departments to weigh and strike this necessary balance. Because you can't say to us, get out of the coal, and the next thing you are disadvantaging more people from access to electricity. Meanwhile, we have quite a serious number of people that are not yet connected. And meanwhile, you can't point out to us what country has absolutely moved out of coal, because it doesn't assist. Remembering the fact that we're coming from a past where quite a big body of people in this country were not seen as people that are subject to receiving services. And in the middle of the state rolling out these services, then there are people who are coming up and saying, no, 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 this is a wrong service. Why must it be wrong now at this day and age, when it was not wrong many years ago, when it was received by very few people? These are some of the things, very vexed questions that we are confronted with. That's why then we're saying this matter of shale gas, as soon as you have taken a position, it will come back to us, so that we are also able to weigh in that debate, to strike this necessary, balance. But the question really, more than the motivation, is how far down the line are we in terms of the investigations that you are doing? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will be answering some of the questions, and my colleague the other questions. Perhaps to start with Honourable Advocate Schmidt's question on the equalization fund and the disjuncture. Perhaps let me explain that when I refer to the equalization fund, the application to the fund is not for the funding of the operations of the petroleum agency. The application to the fund, or the ministerial directive with respect to the fund, was with specific reference to the funding of the Continental Shelf Clean project, because this was a project that was mandated by cabinet to the then Minister of Minerals and Energy, who then instructed SEF to task the petroleum agency as a subsidiary of SEF with the technical know-how. So because it comes through that route, that is why it is still the Minister of Energy and SEF, which is where the equalization fund is managed. So that's how that comes about. It's not for the general funding of the petroleum agency. So I just thought I'd explain that. I don't know if you want to add, Olivia, on the funding and the disjuncture.
Sorry, just one thing, honourable members. I'd just like to say one other thing is that despite the fact that our bill and everything has been submitted to Department of Mineral Resources for processing and those type of things, at this point in time, our shareholder is still SEF. We are still 100% subsidiary of SEF, who reports to the Department of Energy. So at this point in time, our annual strategy forms part of the Department of Energy strategy as opposed to the strategy. So that does cause a huge confusion, because it's a difficulty for us to know where we should be reporting on those sort of things. So that is still causing a major confusion with respect to that dual reporting does still exist, because until such time as the bill is processed and finalized and there is a decision at a governmental level where we where our direct line of reporting is, that dual reporting line does still exist, and our strategy and our annual financial statements and everything like that are still consolidated through energy and not through mineral resources.
Yes, Mr. Chair. The only concern I have, because it's the second time it's been referred to in two successive meetings, but where does your funding now originate from? You talk of the surplus. Is that the surplus which you gain within your status as a subsidiary of CEF, or is it? I'm just trying to locate where your funding comes from, which you refer as to our funds will be depleted. Where does that come from?
Yes, Honourable Member. Historically, in terms of the original ministerial directive that created us, we used to collect all our license and applications and permit fees from all the operators within the industry. With the royalty, the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Royalty Bill that came into being, that funding, with effect from the 1st of March 2010, now goes directly to Treasury, and so the resource, the reserves we have are what we collected historically and we've retained for that. So that is what we are living off now that our source of income has been terminated.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. Perhaps just to add, this was in terms of the ministerial directive that established the Petroleum Agency in 1999. We were allowed to retain and collect reserves so that in where there are dry years, where there is no production, for example, will be able to sustain the organization. So this is it's those reserves that have been accumulated that are assisting us now that we don't have any funding. That's where they come from. Perhaps because we've dealt with the dotted line Chairperson already, let's kill that question. You wanted to know if there are discussions to clarify this through the ministry. Chairperson, we're talking to both ministries, and we are advised that the extent of the discussion we cannot know. I don't know if the gentleman from the DMR is still here, but it's difficult for us to know the extent of the discussions, but yes, it does cause problems here and there. One of the examples of which is the fact that we are reporting here today and we do not know whether you will consider accepting our strategy, and at the same time it will also go with SEF to energy, for consideration again. Now, what if you give different directives with the energy PPC? These are some of the areas that need clarification. Yes, this is precisely because we remain a subsidiary of SEF Pty Ltd. But we trust that discussions are taking place in the matter will be resolved soon. Chairperson, let me go back to the second question by Honorable Schmidt on comparative and competitive, and I'd like Ms. Anabra Baker to respond.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Member, it is right, it's a competitive advantage. But you are right, though, that you cannot do a comparative study without doing the comparative. So your comparative study would inform whether the country is competitive or not. So, for instance, you would be comparing fiscal terms. Do our fiscal terms make us competitive? We would be comparing data availability and the manipulation of data and how it is presented to people. Is it competitive? Would look at our licensing processes, are they competitive or are they not? So the comparative study would inform whether we're competitive or not.
The Honorable Vigani asked about the on page 8.
Honourable Member, I just like to inform that's actually a typing error. If you look at the line item for the activity above that one, on the previous page, that one moved from the 30th of November to the 31st of March because of the shale gas task team, and there was just in collating this document a typing error. The
timeline for that particular objective that you were talking about. There was no move. It was always, the timeline was always as if it was 1st of March 2012. That's just a typo in error, my apologies.
Thank you.
My follow-up would then go back to this shale gas issue.
Thank you, Chair. The next question was Honorable Hululu on the percentages. The percentages that you see below the objectives are they waiting? You will notice, for example, just very roughly that the most of the weight will be in our technical areas, will be in regulation, will be in promotion, will be in data capturing, and then that will be like around 25%, and then thereafter, you know, the others will share. Yes. The next question, where from the chairperson? The first one being on the on the funding model. Yes, there is no act setting up at the moment, Chairperson. And the timelines for the bill, Chairperson, unfortunately, we are totally dependent on DMR on this one. We just have to keep following it up. You know, as long as we've made the submissions on our part, we must keep following up, and we're doing it on a regular basis. It was the intention of the DG to have submitted this on an urgent basis, but I think there have been hiccups within the process, but we're following it up because it's absolutely urgent for us. It's even more urgent than the amendments to the NPRGA. But we are following it up. And yes, we have discussed the funding model with the DMR. The next question was with regard to the need to clarify. Okay, you were just making a comment that there is a need to clarify our roads, and you will do that, you know, as you consider the bill when it comes through. And then lastly, the question was with regard to indications on lifting of the moratorium. We've noted the comments that you made with regard to the balance that needs to be struck. Chairperson, with regard to the lifting of the moratorium, perhaps three answers. The first answer being that the matter, as you know, is being handled by the minister and the department, which sort of constrains us to make public statements on how far the process is. That's the first answer. But the second answer is that the moratorium came in phases. The first phase of the moratorium was, as we initiated it, because of the huge interest shown in that area, in that general central Karoo area, for the availability of potential availability of shale gas. Now, as I explained the last time we're here, we would normally operate on a first-come, first-served basis, which is also called an open-door system. But where particular interest has been shown in a particular area, or perhaps where there has been a particular license over an area, and then that encumbrance is lifted, the usual problem you will have is that you will have a lot of people trying to beat everybody else in getting their applications in. And therefore, the advisable thing to do is to put a moratorium so that you have a structured applications process. Now, the way we had planned it initially was that over time, as areas, you know, was going to be a long-term moratorium, which was for structuring the applications processes.
and therefore the moratorium would not have been a 6-month moratorium or thereabouts. It would have been perhaps a year or two, so that even those areas that are released under different licenses, like a technical cooperation permits, people don't fall over each other's toes to get in their applications, but they are subject to what are called licensing rounds. So the licensing rounds would have continued perhaps for a while. But now, I said it was phased in the sense that there was a further addition then coming out of the cabinet statement and the minister's explanation, which then said that even those applications that had been received prior to the moratorium could not be finalized before this study was completed. Now, that process is underway, Chairperson. There is a task team which is chaired by the present DG, Advocate Sandile Nokrina, and we are working at submitting a report by the end of July. Yes, perhaps that's about the best I can say. We'll submit a report. I would imagine that the report will be advising the minister on the current status, on some steps. In my mind, I do not envisage that the end of July will be the end of the process. I imagine that the minister will be advised on what can be done with immediate effect, so that we also do not fall foul of legislation, and what can be done after what can be done immediately after July, and what will be done, you know, over time. So all of that is being considered together with the technicalities as we are studying them at the moment, and in vis-a-vis the environmental sensitivity of the area. So all of that will be tabled in the initial report that will be at the end of July. I'll take the next question.
Any further questions? Exhausted. Yes,
I think maybe one comment. Yeah, maybe one question, one comment. I think this would come, it would be on our committee side, because my mind is a bit boggled by their status as an entity, as to whether now do we see them as an entity of mineral resources or something else. But if the researcher could do some work for us in the meantime, Chair, in terms of us trying to explore the issue of institutions supporting the democracy, or the issue of Chapter 9 and 10 institutions, just to try and determine, for us to find our own footing in terms of legislative issues that would affect us as mineral resources, because I don't think our focus is so much on the status of PASA, and yet it doesn't seem to be a priority either in energy. I might be wrong, but it looks like they're going to be floating for some time, because it doesn't seem to be a number one priority in terms of getting determined as to where do they fall. If there's some form of analysis or study, short study, can be done by the researcher and give us any relevant information that could be of use to us, because I'm not sure of what the state is right now on the issue of entities supporting democracy or Chapter 9 and 10 institutions. Then the issue of the shale gas, Chair, I'm not quite hearing if there is a country elsewhere that has successfully practiced or gone into exploring and eventually mining into shale. Because the sound to me is as if there's more danger than there will be benefits out of the shale gas. That could also be wrong. But what I'd like to know is, in terms of the moratorium, is it based on the fact that we don't have enough on the dangers that could be portrayed within our own country's situation? Or is the moratorium based on the fact that not the correct people are perhaps, the issue of what should benefit the country must start within the country, And I should think the explorers are mainly from outside the country. I'm just curious to know.
Can I just get the last part again? Explorers?
What I'd like to know, the people who want to explore into the shale gas appear to be people mainly from outside the country, coming into South Africa and wanting us to explore on and then actually have their trade of shale gas within the country. Now, what I'm interested in knowing is the moratorium based on the fact that it's more an issue of people from outside coming to explore, or is it a South African interest for the best interest of South Africans?
Okay, I will take the questions in phases. The first question was whether any country around the world has successfully explored and then developed shale gas. Perhaps can I ask Siki to respond?
The United States has got a very viable shale gas exploration and production. And in fact, the appearance of shale gas changed their energy mix. They, in fact, virtually stopped the import of LNG in America. You also asked if there was any country that is using this controversial method of fracking. Actually, yes. I'll start again with the United States. They are using it in the United States. But fracking is not a new, it's not a new process. It's actually been used in conventional oil exploration. It's also used here in South Africa for the exploration of coal bed methane.
Right. The last part of the question was the purpose of the moratorium, whether it had to do with our own interests or it had to do with the fact that there were external applicants. Chairperson, it certainly had nothing to do with whether or not the applicants were external applicants. It had to do, as Cabinet stated it, and the Minister explained it, that South Africa would not would apply very strict environmental preservation standards. Now, the purpose for Cabinet's concerns were the issues that were raised with regard to the technique to hydraulic fracturing. Briefly, that there were issues of water availability, especially if you're looking at the Karoo, which is a water seriously water stressed area. You know, water availability. Secondly, whether there is potential for contamination of the little water that you have in the Karoo or the little water you have got in South Africa. South Africa is generally referred to as a water stressed country in itself. Could there be contamination? So, and therefore, the minister therefore wanted to be advised of whether this could be safely applied. You know, hence also the proposal of comparing with other countries that have successfully applied or that have had problems for that matter. You know, one of the decisions of Cabinet was that we would also look at other jurisdictions that have interacted with this, whether by way of problems or successfully applying it. So all of that is going to be carried out in that study. And if there have been problems, where exactly have the problems been? Because the problems may not necessarily be with the fracking methodology itself, but may the fact of fracking could very well be with normal drilling, because normal drilling can have problems in themselves, normal vertical drilling before you go horizontal. So the study will look at all of those. The study has got people from different disciplines, from water, from environmental. We will be consulting exploration engineers, you know, looking at the mechanisms that are used for both vertical and horizontal drilling. So all of that will be applied, and also to look at exactly where have the problems.
been and how have they been addressed, because we've got the fortune of these having been applied in the United States with a lot of problems, and therefore when they have learned from their problems, then we are at the advantage, possible advantage of learning from other people's problems in deciding whether to proceed or not to proceed, because the decision could very well be that we are not ready to proceed and therefore perhaps we would have to forego the potentiality that this resource shows for the country at the moment. So all of that will come out of the study.
Thank you very much. I think that brings us to the end of the briefing and the discussions on the strategic plan of PASA. The same fate befalls them in that we don't have a quorum to can be able to clearly pronounce, but we will do that in our very first meeting when we come back. But I think you've given us sufficient answers to basically take an informed decision. Let's thank you very much for the time that you have set aside and spent with us, especially waiting more than an hour before any commencement of the proceedings. We really appreciate that. Honourable members, I think that brings us to the end of this meeting, and let me say this, that we will only meet in the first week when we come back, and we're dealing with all the outstanding matters, and let's wish you well in your rest as well as your constituency period, and hoping that you will come back charged. People who are not going to rest is us, because we must immediately enter into planning process, so that when you are back, things are falling into line in terms of work that needs to be done. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned. Can you share it?
Yeah, I'm in.